Move, bitch. Get out of the way.
Get out of the way. Jeff, you're so white. It's time for me to rock. Hello and welcome to Interactive Distractions, episode number 128. My name is Christopher Keough, and I am here with Travis Baum.
Ladies.
And Jeff Chorney.
Word up. Yeah, all three of them.
Today we are going to be talking to Jason Rohr, who is the creator of Sleep is Death, a little game that an independent game that is quite creative and basically a build your own story type of thing. And we'll get more into that later on, but it's really cool stuff. So hopefully that'll go over well and you guys will enjoy that interview. Before that, we're going to talk about some new releases. We're going to talk about some distractions. For news, we only got one thing we're going to talk about, and probably most of you know what it is. But then after the break, we'll have our interview, and then we'll follow it up with new releases, listener email, and a new question of the week. So, Travis.
Hey.
How's it going, man?
It's going well.
I haven't talked to you in, a couple hours.
Yeah, a couple hours since the old interview from way back in the...
Wait, that happened already?
Yeah.
Spoiled the magic, sorry.
We forgot to tell you, there was a disclaimer when I was setting up the interview, Jeff, that Jason Rohr had specifically said that he has this thing about Canadians.
No Canadians!
Well, no. It wasn't like a... it wasn't like a racial thing. It was a fear of the frosty north, and that also has to do with the people that live in said frosty north. So we had to cut you out, Chris and I. I thought we were being pretty slick. Thinking, okay, what's the time that Jeff absolutely cannot do it, and say that's the only time that we can do it. Therefore, Jeff couldn't do it. We didn't have to hurt his feelings. But now we're letting the cat out of the bag, so now Jeff's going to start crying. He's going to cry himself to sleep tonight on his maple leaf shaped pillow.
Oh, you got a pillow with a maple leaf on it? It's funny because I just finished listening to the interview with the Architects from Expletive Deleted, and they're from Canada, and I didn't know that, so I'm listening to them go off on like, yeah, I don't understand why people think it's funny. You're just maple syrup, maple leaf, mooses. I'm like, well. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. But the only thing that's really going on is still in the recuperating physically and emotionally from finishing up Edie-palooza.
Yes, I'd say I am not recovered yet.
I'd say we had a pretty good time. I know Jeff, you got there really early, like Wednesday, right?
I got there Wednesday evening. Yeah, early Wednesday evening, like 7:30-ish or something like that.
Yeah. Okay, so you got some early QT with the Burgesses.
Yes, I did. And then and Nico was there at that time too.
Right.
Nico Snaggy, yeah.
Right. And then Megan and I got there with Friday. Friday night?
Was it Friday night or Thursday night?
Oh, we left Thursday, but we got there Friday morning at like 2:30 in the morning. Okay, right, yeah. We made the trek.
My morning and nights are totally blurred together right now.
Yeah, they all kind of like meshed together into one timeline. We had a really good time. A lot of Street Fighter. Whole lot of Street Fighter. Well, the whole thing was kind of like a celebration of you know, Glenn's birthday was the week before. It was EDP's 1 year, I believe, right? Also, like Street Fighter came out that week as well, so it was kind of like a trifecta, if you will. There was a whole lot of Street Fighter, whole lot of drinking.
There was a lot of both of those. In fact, I don't even think we cracked out another video game till Friday night.
Right.
I think it was when we busted a Rock Band and threw it on one of the TVs.
Yeah.
Lots of Street Fighter.
Well, highlights. I mean, Jeff, you want to do some quick highlights, like maybe our top two or three. Best moments?
Oh, dude, I can't narrow down to two or three. I hate doing this type of shit.
Isn't like the definitive Desert Island like picks of the best parts. It's like things that stand out. Like for me, we had, I don't know how far I should take this, one of our good best friends take us to their place of business, which happens to be a movie theater. And we got to play fucking Street Fighter on a 55-inch, like... movie theater screen.
55-inch, huh?
I don't know. That's the inch? Foot.
Foot, and it was huge.
It was amazing. It was awesome. It was, one, it was a really, really, really great experience. I mean, I don't know what else to say. Like, it was just badass. Like, to be able to see it and the sounds.
When the characters are like three times the size of you, it's pretty insane. Yeah.
Like, there's a really good picture. I hope he posted up soon. Like, of Scott standing next to, like, under the screen, like holding his arms out wide. It's really,
I got a picture of that. But the picture turned out good because you can see Scott on the screen and the scale. But in terms of what's on the screen, it's a big blur because just could not keep up with it.
Right.
But that was a shitload of fun.
It was a good
thanks to Regan.
Yeah.
That was great.
a lot of drinking. I don't want to say his name. I don't know how far.
Oh, that's right. We might want to beep that out just in case he gets in trouble by his
I seriously doubt people that, you know, that he could.
I highly doubt they listen.
Yeah, they listen. So.
And if they did, they'd probably be like, dude, you didn't invite me? What the fuck?
But that was a really cool time. Anything else really stand out? I mean, I'm sure everybody and their mom have seen the video already. Oh, come on, man. That was the greatest thing ever.
That stands out, yeah. But my nose finally took about 4 days to feel better.
Right.
But, yeah. You'll see the video. I did something embarrassing, and I deserved it. But, maybe we'll post it up in show notes or something. But
well, anything else for you, man, that was, like, really,
just,
really...
Dude, just having everyone to sit around talking and playing Street Fighter locally and just, like, just chilling with everyone was just such an awesome time. Usually there's... Whenever we all go somewhere, there's usually one night where everyone stays up till like 7 in the morning. Literally every single night was like that, to the point where the day I had to fly home, I was just so out of it that day. Like, I was just like, oh my God, I just want to sleep. And something happened. I kind of got my second wind. We ended up going go-karting. And we hit up, actually, we found a really kick-ass arcade, which is probably about maybe half an hour from the airport. And we only got to spend about 20 minutes there because I had to jump on a plane and I didn't want to miss it. Like, one person already did miss their flight earlier that day. But it's a really cool arcade. I don't want to just keep listen to Exploited Deleted podcast for more info on that, because I think they're going to try to look into something involving that arcade. But it was really cool. The best arcade I've been to in years. All they need is a Street Fighter 4 cabinet, and that place would be total killer. They have a big-ass bar in it and everything. It's awesome.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
we all pitched in for people who were staying there and stuff like that. We threw in, ended up getting Kill 9 a 360. So watching him go through all that stuff of putting all the info in, setting up his Xbox Live account and everything.
And he's on that damn thing like 12 hours out of the day. Like, he's on there a lot. He's really embracing his new 360.
So yeah, it was pretty kick ass. But overall, I had an awesome time. My body literally does hate me for real. I don't know what it is. I'm still tired as hell when I wake up, even though I'm trying to get enough sleep. And I do have to confess to something, though. I said I wouldn't do it. I went and did it.
Uh-oh.
But I doubled down.
Did
you get the grilled one or the fried one?
I got the fried one.
Oh, man.
I was like, at this point, we were eating like fatty food and drinking all weekend. I'm like, what the hell? Might as well do it. Hungover.
How are those workouts going for you, buddy?
Oh, man, they're going great. Yeah, that's another thing that sucked. Can't do any exercise for like 6 days. But a bunch of us went, like 10 of us or so, and I think 7 of us got the double down. And it was good. Not going to lie. It was very tasty. Probably won't have another one, though, because I did feel like a bag of ass afterwards. But I did eat one.
I would have tried really one. Good. I would have tried the grilled one, though. I wouldn't have gotten the fried one.
To tell you the absolute truth, I totally forgot about the grilled one when I was in line waiting. I totally forgot. It was even an option. I was just like, I'll get the double down. And a side order of corn, please.
Nice. Can I get some fried chicken with a side of starch?
Appreciate that. Exactly. Like, I may as well have just got the mashed potatoes if I ordered that. Whatever.
Can I have mashed potatoes with corn? Yeah. Double starch me, baby.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, well, I wish I could have been there with you guys, man.
Yeah, we wish you were there too, man. We were cursing you while you were away, for sure. Don't doubt that.
Why was that?
Oh, because we were like, that motherfucker.
Oh, because I wasn't there?
Got to take care of his baby and the kid. Can't hang out with his boys. We understand. We get it.
I can't duck out of E3, though. Those tickets are already bought. So.
I was already there, yeah.
You know what?
By the way, I guess we should mention that, because it actually hasn't officially been mentioned, but Indus will be at E3.
Woot!
So there, it's been mentioned.
I can't wait.
Indus plus one. No, wait.
Indus plus one.
Indus minus two plus one.
One half Indus plus one. How about that? Jason and I are going, and we, unfortunately, Travis and Jeff are unable to make it. So Nico Kusanagi is going to be coming along with us to help us out with equipment and stuff like that. So we are already getting invites for like appointments and stuff, but not by anybody big. But it should be some cool stuff. We'll
take
what
we can get at this point.
Yeah. we'll get some cool stuff and we're going to start, contacting the people that we've talked to in the industry PR.
Right.
And hopefully we can set up things with them too. So we'll see what happens.
And
it'll be interesting.
Everybody, don't feel bad about Jeff and I, because I'll be going to Canada for E3. So we'll be.
And we're going to be sending them shit, and they're going to be uploading it for us.
If you think we are, it makes you sleep better at night, buddy. We're going to be drunk.
Nothing helps me sleep at night anymore.
We'll send this to Travis and Jeff to put this up there next day. What? Who? Why is there porn on our website? What's going on?
Cool.
Oh man, awesomeness.
Well, should we get into it?
Yeah, I think we should. Well, and that's something. Maybe, what have you been up to?
Nothing.
Being a dad.
Nothing interesting.
That sounds awesome.
I didn't go
to Ediepalooza. That was but you know what I did do? While I was watching you guys on the stream on Saturday. I was supposed to be down there with you guys. I even had a Hugas brew ready to go.
Oh, that's right.
And I broke open a bottle of it just to give it a shot, and it was pretty good.
Chris, so, you know what I have to say about you not being at Ediepalooza, buddy? I have one thing.
What? Oh, man. We can't let this turn into another one of those shows that just plays sound bites all over the place and everybody laughs.
Oh, no, that's my only sound bite of the day.
Yeah, it's the only one, but it was good. And you had the rim shot too, which is
yeah. But we didn't.
I don't know how
jokes.
You had that. So like, I don't know if he was like had his hand in his pocket on that button waiting, but he always busted out at the perfect times over the weekend. It was hilarious.
Someone got beaten Street Fighter and all of a sudden, wah, 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 wah.
What's it on your phone or something?
Or he just like it's on his.
It's
his
a soundboard on my.
Or
phone,
he just walk outside. Like, we'd be out there having a smoke or something like that. So he'd walk outside, someone would crack a joke, and right away it'd be... It was pretty funny. But he didn't see the phone in his hand. He was a stealth ninja like that. So right now we're babbling about stuff that listeners, I'm sure, really, really don't care about. So.
Babbling about stuff that's Tampax.
Exactly.
Let's babble about some games.
All right, how about that? You start out.
Let's babble about a whole lot of Super Street Fighter 4, because everyone's dying to hear about it.
Yeah, a whole lot of Street Fighter 4. A lot of Street Fighter 4. My wife is so confused. She's like, how can you guys? She's like, I can understand you, Travis, sitting down for 5 hours playing nothing but video games, but 5 hours straight of the same one video game. And I'm like, I will say, like, our group can definitely oversaturate Street Fighter. Like, there was almost borderline too much Street Fighter. Like, I was starting to get a little space madness. But nonetheless, I'm really liking it. Last week we were talking about it a little bit more, and I had made the claim that I wanted to stick with one of the new characters and try something out different instead of sticking away with Blanca. And I just can't deviate from Blanca. I don't know why. Like, I want to be better. Like, there's so many stereotypes about him. And even the strategy guides we bought over the weekend while we were in Florida said that, Blanca succeeds by what some people would call shenanigans. Some good players would call shenanigans. And it's very, very true. But I really focused this week on really deviating from, said shenanigans, wake up lightnings and wake up.
Well, shenanigans is more of like. It's a weird, kind of a weird mix-up game, kind of. No, I wouldn't call it... I don't think they mean shenanigans, derogatory,
Oh, I do think they mean it that way.
No, Blanca's not really... Well, I guess, yeah, people probably do abuse him in some ways, but...
Well, yeah.
I don't know. When I hear them say, shenanigans, I think mostly just, tricks to, kind of, outwit your opponent as opposed to straight-up combos and beating them down with, force.
Right.
It's like a bunch of little tricks that you pull out, that like shenanigans. Like Fierté. Fierté is weak, and his moves are blockable and punishable, but the problem is he's got so many of them like work in different ways that it just keeps the guy guessing 100% right. of the time. But I guess, I don't know. Yeah, I guess it depends on...
but I'm trying to stick with him, and I mean, hopefully people can tell, and that's something Jason and I even talked a whole bunch about, you know, trying to improve my Blanca game. And, you know, he showed me a lot of good stuff. Jason, even for someone who's probably played Blanca almost less than any other character in the game, and just his basic Street Fighter knowledge just makes him genuinely good at it. And I could tell that if he jumped into Blanca, he'd be able to be at least decent with him. And, you know, he showed me a lot of things. We had our tournament, did pretty well, you know, with our little tournament for the ED Palooza thing while we did the live show. So I'm liking it. I can definitely tell the good and bad they added. Like, I didn't think I would be able to have an eye for the changes they made to Blanca. Like, for instance, like, they seriously nerfed his ultra. I mean, what?
Thank God.
What, Jeff? Like, maybe 15% less damage it'll
oh,
do?
God,
if
least,
anything?
Yeah.
If that?
I'm happy about that.
And I can definitely see that. And I mean, it kind of made, you know, his ultra really made it easy mode. Now, but the thing is, my thing was, it's very hard to stick his ultra completely. And it takes some sort of skill to really, you know, nail the timing on his ultra. So I always thought that extra damage as sort of a reward for being able to be good at that move. But one thing they did do, and it's a move that's really underutilized by Blanca players, is his hop. You know, his surprise hop, where he can hop forward and backwards. That has, you know, better range and recovery than like a normal dash forward. But you can like hop behind a player and do something. Also, you can like hop into combos, hop into ultras and everything. They reduce the recovery time for that, which makes links in like jumping into the ultra a whole lot easier. So it actually improved my game more. Even though overall he was nerfed more than he was like, you know, he received any benefits. So for me, I really like the change to Blanca on the whole. It does suck that the ultra was nerfed, but for the most part, I think the changes that were made to him have bettered my you know, ability to fight with him, because I'm not trying to just, you know, work my way up to his ultra. You know, I'm actually trying to do different things with, you know, links and cross-ups and everything. And big ups to Blue Steel. Me, Blue, and you, Jeff, we sat down and we're just working on trials the entire time, practicing links with different characters and everything. Then, you know, I can't imagine to tell you how much that helped me. You know, sitting with two guys that are really good, you know, at Street Fighter, and just like learning links, seeing what they're doing. Cause like sometimes it's very hard to grasp, you know, how to, you know, time those button presses.
Oh, especially if someone's just telling you.
Exactly. Yeah. It really improved my game. Really, really improved my game. So, and that's it for Street Fighter, pretty much for me personally. Jeff, I mean,
I'm not going to go into Street Fighter, cause I mean, we're going to do, the goo as well as like us, because the whole Scrub Sport thing.
Right.
We're gonna put out an episode of Scrub Sport Center. We're gonna release it on both our feed as well as the Goo's feed. So if you subscribe to either one, you'll get it. But we're just gonna do a show just on Super Street Fighter 4, go into details and stuff like that. And
cool.
Because I know a lot of people get tired of the Street Fighters and then into fighting games. I can understand that. I'd probably feel the same way if I had to listen to another podcast, do like an hour talking about, say, I don't freaking know, like Command and Conquer or something.
Right.
But yeah, so you can tune into that. But I would say for now, I freaking love it. I have picked up a new character. I'm looking to pick up a fourth, and I want to become really good at one of them, then above average on the other one, just to have a good variety.
Right.
But it's kind of hard. But yeah, that's it for Super for me. Yeah, I'll save the rest for the other show.
All right. I know we have another game we're going to share topics on, so I'll hold that off for last. But another game, I'm still digging on Trials, man. That's another one of my jams.
I did exactly. I got home and I jumped into Trials. Not exactly that night, but the next day. And I was like, I gotta do some of these.
Yeah, it's a blast, man. It's a great just jump into it game. Like,
yeah, Chris. Like when we were there, everyone pretty much left on the Monday, or was it Sunday? Sunday.
Yeah, and Sunday.
Everyone pretty much left. So surprisingly, we didn't even break Open Street Fighter at all on Sunday. Not at all. So
wow, that's impressive.
Yeah. So. Glenn had his 360, so we're just sitting there, and he just started playing some of the trial games on his Xbox Live. So we started playing Trials HD, and Dane Crackerjack myself and him, and I think Pigpen was still there at the time, and maybe Ace is High, I can't remember. We started playing over and over again, just doing like time attacks and stuff, just with the trial game.
Right.
And then we convinced Glenn to buy it, and we played that game for about 7.5 hours straight.
Well, to me, that's an easy purchase for him because he's like in real life a motorcycle guy. So to me, that's like that was a no brainer. So yeah, having a ton of fun on that, man. I can't see me stopping that game anytime soon. And then Halo Reach, the beta started Monday for us, and the world rejoiced. And I've been playing it pretty solid. Like, because Jeff, you and I don't have too much time with your work schedule to play very often, but I've been playing a good bit. And the more I play it, hear me out first. I know that the beta is limited. There's only 2 maps right now. They haven't unlocked all the like the invasion game types. They haven't, the generators tomorrow, game type. They haven't unveiled that yet. So there's more to see. But the more I play what we have available right now, I am so surprised on how much is the same from the Halo 3 multiplayer.
Totally disagree.
Now
it is so much different.
It's. I'm talking about gameplay. I thought the gameplay
itself.
That's what I'm
talking about, gameplay itself.
Okay. This is why I'm saying, hear me out. Yes, there are loadouts. The scout can run fast. You can be the guy with the jet pad. You can be that. Okay, there's that. But you know, when it comes down to it, like it's playing the same for me. I'm not saying it's bad. Mm. What works with Halo works, and it's fine, and I am having fun. But I thought there was going to be like. I don't know.
New game or something?
It's unfair to say this, but I thought I was going to go into this multiplayer and have my mind blown. Okay, mainly because I feel that they have improved on Halo, on what Halo has been in the past, but I still feel like they're behind Battlefield. I still feel like they're behind Modern Warfare. I don't think they have reached... Like, I don't think Bungie reached that point. I don't think they totally... I can tell they didn't want to copy what these guys are doing in terms of create your own loadouts, create your own, your own different types of classes. You know, do what you will with that. I know they wanted to step away from that and not totally, copy what the other guys are doing.
So you wanted Halo to be Battlefield, basically.
I wanted Halo to be on the same level in terms... Or just impress more.
Impress in which way, though?
Okay, we've been talking about it with Battlefield. Like, it's not like, the game has issues, but it's like, it's just so fun being able to, with what you can do with teamwork. It's something that you haven't seen before. And I expected Bungie to throw stuff at us that we've kind of not seen before.
Well, we haven't seen the game types
exactly,
that would be like that in Battlefield.
The games
yet.
That they've shown to us so far, and what they, because we know what's coming. They've explained to us, verbatim, what is coming. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, it just seems like a step behind what other games are already doing now.
So yeah,
it seems like it's going to be what we've been doing in other games in the Halo universe with better matchmaking.
Nah, see, I think
which is not bad.
I think Halo's stuck with what they're good at. It's a sci-fi shooter for one. It's not trying to be realistic warfighter like Modern Warfare or Battlefield. And I'm glad they are sticking to that. They're still sticking with the kind of floaty jumping and the sci-fi feel to it, because that's what Halo is. And I think that them adding in the loadouts was their way of being, okay, well, we have to do something because people want some kind of new game type, but new kind of playability as opposed to just grenade, shoot, jump.
Right.
Which is good. And I think if they could put a good spin on it where you can pick, not everyone can do everything, yet everything is not class-based, which is good. Also, making the Covenants totally different. Though the Elite's totally different than the Spartans, I think adds a lot to the game, especially when they start bringing out the game types that will actually have both of them on one map.
Yeah.
Because that'll actually take in some strategy and who you're going to pick and what weapons use what where.
Yeah.
I think people should really stop comparing it to because people who want... I hear the same from everything. It's more Halo or it's just like Halo. Well, yeah. Just like Call of Duty Modern Warfare was more Call of Duty 3 and Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 was more Call of Duty Warfare 1. It's like, I don't understand what people expect from it. Of course it's going to be more Halo, just with new stuff. Like, I don't expect it to blow anyone... Graphic-wise, of course, it's not going to blow anyone away. And unless... I don't understand what they could have done, because it still has the best matchmaking, for sure. Like,
oh yeah.
Now you don't even have to bring up another menu to invite people to your party list. They're already right there.
Awesome.
Just click one button, and you can change anything on the fly.
Right.
So unless... See, this is what I don't understand is unless you expect it to be like Battlefield on Modern Warfare, I don't see how it can be a disappointment if you're a Halo fan.
Okay, but this is exactly why I said. Now I understand that we don't have a lot of we have like maybe 20% of the game open to us right now of the multiplayer. We probably have like 20% of the game open to us at this moment. So I understand, but where the game is right now, what they've given to us right now, it's not, to me, it's not much of a step up. Like I'm having just as much fun now that I would be having with Halo 3, which is good. It's still Halo. And that's the thing. I think you're kind of like underlyingly, like you think I'm like, I feel like you believe I'm hating on it, which I'm not.
I don't think you're hating on it.
I thought it was going to be something like, I thought my mind was going to be just going to melt inside my skull when I played this. Like Bungie was really hyping this up. Like this is the Halo game we wanted to make.
Well, and it also is a beta with two levels to us right now.
Yeah.
So I think it's kind of too late to judge really. But yeah, I can see that. I guess that when I first played it the night I got home, and I got home at like 1:30 a.m. and I'm like, I'll just download Reach. And I was downloading, I'm like, you know, it's going pretty quick. I'll just wait for it to finish and played a couple matches. And those couple matches, I was kind of underwhelmed. I was like,
yeah,
okay. But then again, I played two matches, didn't really get into any of the loadouts or nothing. But once, like, we've been playing, like, yesterday we had 8 of us playing in one party, so I didn't have to matchmake us with any randoms. So it was just us picking what game type we wanted to play, basically, with the voting. And we had a ton of fun.
Yeah.
Like, just craziness. Like, people, Jetpack, everyone's communicating, like, okay, I'm going to take Jetpack, you take Armor Guard, you know, you stay by the flag and stuff. It was pretty awesome.
Right.
But then again, the same thing could happen with Halo 3, which is that experience is way better than the first night I had on Reach. Or with Reach, I guess.
Right.
But to me right now, it's as multiplayer, it's perfectly what I wanted for in terms of the gameplay mechanics. I do want more modes for sure, and I'll wait until tomorrow to find out what these new modes are, how fun they're going to be. But in terms of the, like I said, way back when they make another Halo, I want it to be like Halo, but just on a bigger, not necessarily scale, but just to be more updated to modern day shooters. And I think they've done that.
Well, yeah, so and that was my thing. Like to me right now, modern day shooters, their big thing now is about customization. And I wish the customization would be there more, because I mean, there is a level of it way more than what previous Halos have ever attempted to do. But you know,
and none of it changes anything, really.
No, it's all that. I was very, very disappointed about, you know,
they did
things.
Say that they haven't released their whole, like, they're leveling up, like, the carrot in front of the horse type thing. They haven't even announced what that's going to be.
Yeah, like, what you receive, like you know, what you purchase, like, you know, different things for your armor, different, like, shoulders, different chest plates and everything, like, with the credits that you earn every match. Yeah, like, I wish they would tell me, like, what those do, because if in the end, those just end up being...
Oh, those don't do anything in the beta, for sure.
Okay, well, if they end nothing up being nothing but, you know, in the full game, end up being just aesthetically, like, appealing, you know, additions to your character, I'll be very, very disappointed. They better
I won't. I can go without level. Like, I've never been one to be addicted to the Call of Duty leveling up or Modern Warfare, so I would like if it's there, but it's not a turnoff for me if they don't put anything like that in there.
Well, here's the problem. This is what people complain about with Modern Warfare in terms of, okay, the matchmaking's terrible in Modern Warfare because they're always pitting a level 1 person who has no updates, no perks, and they're always like matching 50. Them up with a you know, someone who's already prestige twice that has every fucking weapon in the game. That happens, but here, guess what? Bungie, no one touches them in matchmaking. When you matchmake for your level, you're pretty much going to get someone that's pretty close to your level. I've always had great success in matchmaking in the Halo games.
And Bungie, I think it's because they don't have that separation of someone who's been playing it. Like, if it basically comes down to skill of the game.
Yeah.
Like, if someone who's been playing it for 15 hours is going to have 13 more different guns and better loadouts than the person who just put in the game an hour ago.
But
they all have access to the same thing on the same level, it comes down to
experience with the game. I don't think it has much to do, much less with the... I think it has more to do with the matchmaking and the skill that they have, other than the fact that, okay, everyone's just the same. No one's, like, customized to their liking. I don't think it has much... they patented the true skill leveling system.
Oh, yeah.
That's their thing, and it's the best thing. Like, it's what makes their matchmaking if you want to be, you know, lined up with someone of your skill. That true skill level is fantastic, and I think with that, I mean... If you're matched up with someone of your skill, you're gonna have everybody's gonna have the same arsenal because they're gonna be leveled up around the same area. So I think that they could have, you know, using the technology they have for their matchmaking, I think being able to customize more would be. Now, of course, we're speculating. In the end, you know, in the final game, these, you know, things you buy with your credits, they can add to your...
Yeah, we don't know yet.
We don't know. So anyway. But all right, now first impressions, like, I like it. I am having a good time. It's just that I really need to see more of these modes so I can get a final judgment on, you know, this beta. So.
Word.
But that's it for me, man.
That's pretty much it for me, dude. That's all I've been playing. we really got to start changing up the order of this.
Yeah, I know, because we just
should I start going in between you guys?
Well, no, because we still play the same games. Like, yeah, that's the problem.
That's literally, I think that's literally all I've played with some Rock Band thrown in there. And
oh yeah, we did play Rock Band. Yeah.
Yeah, Trials. Yeah, that's basically it. Bunch of Halo and a bunch of Super Street Fighter.
Good hype.
Okay.
Word.
Well, I played, let's see, what did I play? Jump back into Half Minute Hero.
Sweet.
Game is fun as shit. I don't think I've gotten that much further, though. I think I'm on, like, the 11th chapter now or something like that. I don't remember. But played a little bit more Monster Hunter Tri as well. Not too much, because most of my time was spent taking Travis's advice, putting it on easy, and playing Red Faction Guerrilla. And that game is fun as shit. And I think what really, when it really clicked for me was there was like in the first like area, the first town, you have these destruction targets, the like buildings that you go out to blow up, and it, you know, it's considered a guerrilla action and all this other crap. They right. had three that were right next to each other, and two of them were medium targets and one of them was a high value target. And the two medium value targets were like these, they were kind of like towers or smokestacks. And I demolished them in such a way that both of them fell on top of the high value target and basically pretty much destroyed it without me having to do anything. It was pretty fucking awesome. And
yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. That's what really got me. That was the point where I said, this is really fucking cool, you know, and, you know, after that, I started just, I got addicted to it and just started playing it some more. I think right now I'm at the end of the second, town, Dust. And, yeah, I mean, I'm just enjoying the hell out of it. You know, whenever I get a chance to play, I'm playing a little bit of that at least.
I love that game.
Yeah, it's good. It's good.
It's fun.
I'm glad I traded it in. What's that?
I said, I'm kind of ticked I traded it in.
Well, I'll be honest with you. I'm really glad that after Travis mentioned it after he mentioned to put it on easy, Scott sent me a message and told me to do the same thing. He's like, you know, Travis is right. The game is, you know, the difficulty of the game is kind of whack. So just put it on easy and have fun with it. And that's what I did. And I mean, it's just a great time. So, cause just shit's blowing up everywhere and you're just destroying everything. Oh, it's great. But I mean, that's it. That's all I played this week. So it's been a lot of Red Faction.
Do you have ODS? You don't have ODS, do you?
No, I don't. No.
I thought you might have bought it for like cheap or something from Amazon.
No, you know, I actually looked at it. I was thinking about it because, you know, with all the hype about the Reach beta and everything like that, I was like, maybe I'll give it a shot.
And if you can find it for $40, it's worth it if you're going to play Halo 3 after.
And that's the thing. I know I wouldn't. So. I'm not going to bother. I just know that
we have been playing like every day.
Yeah. We've been playing every day. And then on top of that, once the beta is over with, Reach is going to give us that itch that we need to scratch like more frequently to play more Halo 3. I can see us playing more Griffball and Monster Trucks.
Oh,
and
yeah.
To me, those are games that'll be more to your liking because I don't think you like the shooting aspect of first person shooters. Exactly. But if you play the games that we play, because we rarely play the actual like, you know, shooting parts of Halo. We play, you know, different variations on the Halo engine. So, I mean, we'll definitely, you know, play it more to what you would be interested in if you want to play with us more. Because we have a blast, man.
All right. There's been a few Sundays now where just randomly we'll just jump on and people will just start joining up. Like, holy crap. We also have a full room of Halo players. Yeah. This is insane.
It's fun.
All right.
Dude, Double Recon was playing with us the other night.
Yeah, I remember you guys mentioning that. He's playing Battlefield too, right? Still?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He's not a big Halo fan, trust me. He was cursing up a storm yesterday.
Cool. Yeah, but that's it. So, Jeff, I'm going to pass it to you. Introduce our next conversation.
Well, we've talked a lot about Halo, and can't really mention Halo without mentioning Bungie. And they left Microsoft a while ago, and they went independent. Not so independent anymore.
No.
No, so... Well, technically, no. They actually got picked up by Activision. Your favorite company, Chris.
Yeah, this is something that happened like shortly after we recorded last week's show.
Yeah.
Because we recorded early last week.
Right.
And like, we recorded on Tuesday, and like Wednesday morning this shit happened, or maybe it was Thursday, I don't remember, but I don't know. It sounded to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, guys, but it sounded to me like they said that their next big franchise would be published by Activision.
Yeah,
they are still their own.
Well, it's a 10-year contract. So for the next 10 years, Activision will be publishing anything Bungie releases.
But well, see, that's not after some other stories came out. That's not what it sounded like. It sounded like they had the rights to that particular franchise, and that was it. And they had, so Bungie had the opportunity to go after other publishers as well.
Really?
I mean, I don't know if that's right.
I know there's nothing tied into it. Like, they had full independent, like that full creative,
Control.
Control over the whatever IP they want to do. Plus, they get to set the pricing. Plus, basically, like, they are independent. Just Activision is going to publish the game. So they're kind of like, we want in on this somehow.
Yeah. And I'm sorry. This is a great deal it's a win-win situation for Bungie, in my opinion. The only thing that would be a problem is they have that Activision brand that's going to be, you know, stained onto the front case of their games, which honestly,
by the hardcore,
when did that ever hurt Modern Warfare 2?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Whenever. No one cares.
The only thing that might hurt is because Bungie really has only done Halo for the last 10 years. So people will still probably follow them, but it's still going to be hyped to hell to even get on the same level that Halo was on, or close to it. So unless Activision's willing to, because they're going to have to pay. Like, Activision's going to have to, like, push whatever it is Bungie's going to put out, because not many people know that Bungie even did Oni. And we talked about that before. Oni wasn't, like, a great game by any means. And apparently the next game's going to be, like, an action game, like action-venture or something like that. So,
Pimps at Sea, man, is what it's all about.
Pimps at Sea.
I think, was it, Justin McRoy said that the Pimps at Sea game that's made by Treyarch is just not as good as the one made by Bungie. Oh, that's funny stuff.
That's awesome. Pimps at Sea.
Yeah, it's kind of weird, though. I guess I was just really surprised, especially with all the stuff that's going on with Infinity Ward, you know,
it is like a knee-jerk reaction, maybe, unless it was in the works before that happened.
Yeah, I'm not, that's the thing, I don't even know. And it sounded like it was in the works before it happened anyway, because one of the things that Bungie released is that they were waiting until all the noise cleared up from Infinity War bullshit. Yeah. So I have a feeling that that is the situation.
Yeah, and it does make sense for Bungie, it really does, when you look at it as, well, they've spent pretty much their entire successful portion of their career with holding hands with Microsoft. You know, it is kind of odd just hearing of Bungie's being all by themselves, you know, whereas joining with, you know, being in cahoots with the company Activision, you know, they make so much money, just as Microsoft makes so much money off of their games. It just makes sense. Like, you know, of course they're going to link up with another huge, huge developer, and why not link up with the biggest one that's, you know, available
Fix
right now.
There, yeah.
It just makes sense. Come on, Activision pushes their games. Like, the big AAA titles, come on, man. Modern Warfare 2 was everywhere. And trust me, they're going to give the same love to these other games as much as they gave Modern Warfare, just because it's Bungie. And Bungie
I wonder if they can mention Halo in the advertising. I guess they probably could, couldn't they? Or maybe not.
From
the creator of Halo. Yeah, I don't know how that works. I was going to say Unreal Tournament.
Bungie doesn't own that.
Bungie
doesn't own that anymore. But they're going to be multi-platform now. They're not just going to be set to, you know, a specific platform. So the games will be available. I don't think so. Maybe there will be some, you know, legal.
Microsoft would do all in their power so that just could not happen. But I don't know. It'll be interesting.
Yeah.
Especially, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to see if they can do something else. So.
That would be interesting.
Their first project will probably be another first-person shooter.
I wouldn't be surprised if Activision's pushing that at all. Because, I mean, they said that it's an action adventure, something like that, but I don't know if that's true, and it's got to be a first-person shooter. Like, I mean,
well, especially with all the mess with Infinity Ward and the Modern Warfare series and what that's going through right now, I would not be. I'm almost expecting a first-person shooter.
I'm expecting a game a lot like Halo, just called something else.
Yeah,
and gonna be multi-platform. Like, it's very maybe on like a different engine. That's maybe they're gonna go more because they can take more like risks, not having the Halo brand on it, so they can do like same kind of style, but
right.
Do maybe instead of like push the graphics further, instead of like all the options or frame rate or whatnot, or mm-hmm. whatever they want to do. But I don't know. Hopefully, maybe you'll see guys will see something at E3. Who knows? Actually, it might be a little bit too early, but
yeah.
That's really it. Yeah, that's what we're talking about.
Cool. Well, I wanted to get that out of the way. I figured we'd want to chat about that a little bit, but you know, I guess we'll find out what happens in the future. All right, well, let's take a break, and when we come back, you guys will hear the interview with Jason Moore. Roar?
Jason Roar. Roar. Like a lion.
Roar.
And, Roar.
Nice, and, Jeff.
After that, we'll do some new releases, listen to our email, and a new question of the week. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back.
Well, ain't this working?
Did you turn it on?
Of course I turned it on, you tool.
You have it on channel 3?
Thanks a lot, Captain Obvious.
Jeez, man, I'm just trying to help. Oh, did you clean the contacts?
Of course I did. No. I'll be right back.
Sega! Oh, look! Now you broke it! Oh, screw it. This is just too much work.
True, but all I want to do is relive my youth.
Fine. Let's just go head over to theretrogamers.com and listen to two of those awesome guys talk about our favorite games.
That's one we can submit our ideas and then be co-hosts.
You bet your britches.
Now let's just load up iTunes and get this show started.
Theretrogamers.com. Your passion, your voice.
And welcome back.
You welcome back.
Yeah, Jeff's not around, so you got to say that for him. All right, so we have something very special planned for today. Joining us on the line is Jason Rohr, who is the creator of a very creative little game called Sleep or Death. Jason, how
sleep
you doing?
Is death.
Sleep is death. Sleep is death. Sorry. I knew that.
Jeez. I'm doing good. I'm doing really good.
Cool. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and a little bit about this game that you've made?
Well, I'm an independent, video game designer and programmer and everything-er. You know, I do all my games 100% myself, from start to finish. I do promo myself, do PR myself, do tech support myself.
Wow.
All out of the comfort of my own home. And I've been making games, since my first game came out in September of 2004. And I've made, Sleep is Death is my 14th game.
14th game.
Wow. 14th game, yeah. Passage, which is the game that most people know me for, came out 2.5 years ago. Although people still say, oh, you're the guy who made Passage, aren't you? A lot of people think, you know, that Sleep is Death is the game I made after Passage, but I actually made, you know, something like 9 games between Passage and Sleep is Death.
Wow.
Yeah, I've done a lot of stuff and tried a bunch of different things over that time. Haven't really, I hope. It's clear to people who've looked at the stuff I've made that I haven't really gotten stuck in a rut. I've kind of been exploring a bunch of different things. And Sleep is Death is the latest sort of tangent where I'm not really focused on doing kind of expressive things through game mechanics like I was in like Passage and Gravitation, but instead trying to figure out how to do stuff with real characters and real character interactions with actual dialogue, which I guess is, you know, a lot of people see as sort of this unsolved problem for video games.
Okay, cool. What other games have you made? I mean, you mentioned Passage, you mentioned Gravitation. What was your first game? Just out of curiosity.
My first game was called Transcend. Okay. It was this little, I don't know if you ever played the game Everyday Shooter for the
PS3.
So Transcend was sort of a like Everyday Shooter, but it came out like a couple years before that. It was a musical arena shooter type game with really kind of abstract psychedelic graphics.
Nice.
With all these geometric shapes that would kind of morph and bloom into each other and stuff and kind of novel gameplay mechanics. And you were actually I guess, you know, Everyday Shooter has you sort of as you shoot things, it kind of plays into the music. Well, in mm-hmm. Transcend, you're kind of manipulating objects in the arena that change the way the music sounds. So I'm proud of it. It was my first, I've been programming for a number of years before that. So this was my first game, and worked hard on it, sent it off to some festivals. It got rejected. And then I made a game called Cultivation after that, which actually did get accepted into the Slam Dance Festival. And that was sort of my sort of jumping in with both feet into the world of video games, where I started meeting all these independent game designers and sort of thinking about games full time and doing nothing but games. And then since Cultivation, I've made, 12 other games. Passage was my next one after Cultivation. And then I got picked up by The Escapist to make a game a month for them for a while. So I made 7 games for The Escapist magazine.
Oh, wow.
That was kind of this, project where I was making these tiny games, like little sketches, right? Like where I only spent 1 week on each one. And I put one of those out every month for 7 months. And my game Between won the Innovation Award at the IGF a couple of years ago. And my game Gravitation won the jury prize at IndieCade. So I've been out there for a while doing all different sorts of stuff.
Wow. That's impressive, man.
It's been a wild ride.
Let's talk about Sleep is Death. Let's talk about that.
About Sleep is Death.
I screwed up the name because the first thing that popped in my head was Keiko Death, and I don't know if you're familiar with that reference, but so Sleep is Death. Where did you come up with this name?
Oh, gosh. Everyone asks about the name, right? I guess it's something that you're supposed to sort of figure out after you played the game a while.
Okay.
It's sort of a puzzle, but it does have sort of relevant meaning. And the other part of the title is Geisterfahrer, which is a German word. Mm-hmm. And that's just supposed to be Google bait, right? So I guess, some German people emailed me saying, well, I assumed everyone knew what that meant. I guess people haven't really asked too much about my other game titles, so I guess this one's a little bit more enigmatic. I mean, Sleep is Death is this game that sort of doesn't itself have any content or theme. It's sort of a tool, right? Mm-hmm. Yet it has this title that's kind of evocative. And I guess that's part of the point, right? Is that the title kind of colors your experience a little bit more than if I had just put out some sort of tool and called it, Story Maker 3000 or whatever,
yeah.
Right?
Definitely. Yeah, the name definitely does grab you.
So when you sit down to play a game of Sleep is Death with your friend, you sort of go into it with this sort of, this sort of cloud over your head. Feels like a Jason. It's going to feel more like a Jason Drawer game than if you, if it had some different sort of very technical sounding, tool sounding name, like Photoshop or Game Maker or whatever. Right.
All right. Cool. So, well, how did you come up with the idea? Give us like an origin of how you came up with the idea behind Sleep is Death.
Well, there's this, people always talk about this unsolved problem for video games, right? Which is essentially boils down to dialogue. That
right.
You want to have games that are about people and about characters that you interact with. And it's not like you want to ape, it's not like you're trying to copy movies. Because movies are character driven and all this, and you want to make something that's just like a movie. I mean, if you want to do that, you just use a cutscene. I'm not talking about that. The fact of the matter is that human beings are the most interactive things in our lives, right? We interact with them every single day, and they're incredibly complex and compelling, and it's almost like a game in and of itself, right? Interacting with other people. So if we want to make interactive work, it seems very natural to want to make work about people because they're so interactive, right? but we really can't do it, and we don't really have people in our games. I mean, we have sort of cardboard cutouts in our games, and we have like cutscenes that show our characters in our games doing things and talking and stuff. And then in some games like Mass Effect, we have some dialogue trees where you can sort of, interact with these people in a very sort of removed, distant kind of way with these sort of pre-authored sentences that you get to select from. And then you got something like Facade where you get to type whatever you want, but the AI doesn't really understand you most of the time.
Right.
So it's this big kind of really difficult problem, right? It's so obvious. You want to make games about interacting with people, but people are the hardest thing to do with a video game. Sort of like against the grain of the medium in some ways. Mm-hmm. But I sort of realized that it's only hard if you're trying to make a single player video game. As soon as you put another person into the equation, dialogue becomes the easiest thing there is to do. And in Sleep is Death, in fact, it's much harder to simulate even a character picking up something than it is to simulate a conversation. I mean, conversation becomes the atom of the grain of if Sleep is Death is sort of like a new medium or a new genre or something, the grain of that genre is dialogue. That's like the easiest thing to do. So that was sort of my insight. It's like, we've been waiting so long. We're waiting on artificial intelligence to solve this problem. And we're kind of stunted when we try to do dialogue trees and things that don't really work. You know, so, but can, like, actually we could solve this right now. Like we could have real characters in our games right now. If we just like say, let's make a 2-player game, you know, and maybe it'll actually be really interesting for both people involved. And okay. Yeah. Maybe we didn't solve the problem that we originally set out to solve, but we still got, you know, interactive characters in a game all of a sudden that we haven't ever had before. Right.
Okay. That's cool.
That was my motivation.
Yeah, and that's a very good point, because, you know, how many games do you play, and you're sitting there playing the game, and all of a sudden something really horrible gets said, and it just, you just can't do anything but roll your eyes about it, you know?
Right. And then also games have to be limited, especially, you know, what Jason brought up about single-player games. They have to be limited for it to be a game. For this game to exist, there have to be major limitations to where when you add that second person, yeah. I mean, the possibilities are damn near endless.
Right, right.
Yeah, when you have two imaginations going at it.
Right. Well, I guess, you know, the core idea was not so much about, you know, oh, we can finally make a game where you can do whatever you want. I mean, you know, that's obviously another sort of side effect of it, right? That you can get people in there who kind of come up with some scenario, and then you get this player in there who's going to do whatever they want and kind of lead it in this crazy direction. And a lot of the stories that have been posted, you know, on the Sleep is Death community websites are these really sort of zany things that go off in this bizarre tangent, right? But, you know, my core motivation was really just solving that problem of dialogue, right? Like about, you know, about how you can have, like, you know, some sort of character that you can actually walk up to and say something completely reasonable to and in context, and not have them like behave like a broken robot, right?
Right.
And for them not to repeat the same line over and over if you talk to them multiple times.
Hello, young man. You look like you're...
Well, cool. The one thing I noticed about it, and I'm gonna be completely honest with you. I have a newborn, and I haven't had time to play any games, so I haven't really gotten a chance to play it. But I did do a lot of poking around on your website, and I saw a lot of the slideshows and the stuff like that. And it seems that
wait a minute. You have a newborn, and you don't know what the title means? haven't you been up all night, sir?
Actually, no. My wife has, but
your wife is pretty, up all night. You're snoring in the other room.
She's pretty. No, I'm in the same room. She just makes me change the diapers.
Oh, you just wear earplugs.
No. But what I was getting to is, like, during like the tutorial slideshows, it shows that like the two players have two very distinct roles in the way the game plays out. Can you give a little information about those two roles, or
So it's a totally asymmetric game where, you know, like a game like chess is totally symmetric where both people have the same pieces and the same move options and everything. This game has totally different interfaces, totally different roles, totally different, like, sort of, meanings of life for the two different players. One player is the controller. They're the person who set up the story world ahead of time, got everything ready, got the characters in place, got the objects and props and background scenery, maybe even wrote some music that in the game editor to play in certain scenes. And they set all this up and get it ready. And then they are sort of waiting for the player to connect and get dropped into this world as the main character. So the player, on the other hand, just controls one character and has a very simple interface, that lets them move, speak, and act, where they can type in a verb and point it at something, like, you know, type, you know, the verb pick and point it at a flower. So yeah, they have these totally different roles. The controller is actually controlling the whole world, but also all the other characters that are around the player. So the player is just controlling this one character. All the other, what in a traditional video game you'd call the non-player characters, that are usually controlled by artificial intelligence or whatever. In this game, they're all controlled by this one other person who's the controller, who's sort of I guess the equivalent of God, or the equivalent of, you know, the man behind the curtain, or the puppet master.
The first thing
master.
That came to mind for me is, like, in the old days when I used to play, like, D&D or something like that, like, one player is the GM or the DM.
Right, and so that's totally what this person is. I mean, they're the I'm not going to call them the Dungeon Master.
Right. Well, that's why I said GM first.
some people say DM, and then they say Dungeon Master, and then people say no, Drama Manager.
Drama.
But Game Master. I guess Game Master is sort of a more general term, right? And they are very much in that role. Although there's a big difference between this and like a Dungeons and Dragons or live face-to-face role playing, and that there's this like. This layer of abstraction and in sort of interface between the two people, right? That sort of separates them. So you're not sitting there staring into your friend's eyes as you pretend to be a 5-year-old girl who's, who hasn't had water in 3 days and can't pee anymore, right? because you're speaking through this character and there's a visual representation of her and she's speaking through a bubble and sort of like that makes a bunch of things that would be really uncomfortable stories to explore together face to face actually possible and sort of comfortable, where you can sort of play the role of characters that are totally outside the range of something you could perform vocally, right? And or perform comfortably looking into somebody's face, right?
Right.
I'm 6'8" and I've got right now I have a beard and and a relatively male voice, right? And if I want to play a little girl in some story, what am I going to do? Start talking like this, Daddy? if I'm sitting at a table with you and I'm trying. So that's why, we're going to tell a story about elves and fighting battles, right? because we can't actually tell a story about a dying grandmother, because who's going to play the dying grandmother? Now, all grandson, right, I'm going to be watching you from heaven. it starts to sound like an Adam Sandler tape or something, right?
Nice.
Well, Chris, I'm going to butt in real quick. I want to ask you a quick question, Jason, because one of the first things that came to my mind when I had first booted up the game was when you get to the main screen, when you are the GM, per se, it can be daunting looking at the game editor for the first time. Can you talk about the learning curve?
Right.
Of starting your own game for someone else to come in and play.
Right. Yeah. So the learning curve for the controller side is, relatively steep. I guess if you're going to compare it to like sitting down to try and play Tetris or something.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, it lets you do this thing that you've never really been able to do before. So it's a really comprehensive interface that actually in the end lets you do something relatively simple, which is just, kind of control these objects and what they say and what they do in a scene. But it's the sort of level of control that it gives you over all the different aspects of what these objects, how they're positioned and, whether they're faded in or out or not. And then, of course, if you go deeper into the interface, there's editors for all those objects too. So mm-hmm. if somebody comes up to a tree or a flower vase that you've painted and picks a flower and you're sort of not prepared for that, you could go down into the editor and edit the vase so that there's one less flower in it, and make that happen. So it's an interface with multiple levels. So at the topmost level, like if you really just want to play a kind of a basic story with the stuff that ships with the game, that's all you need to look at. Like the deeper editors are hidden from you. And you don't really need to worry about them. So I'm pretty happy with that. Like you can just kind of walk up to it and here's all the controls you need right on one screen for pretty much doing everything you need for a basic story. And on top of that, like if you want to, sort of get started telling stories, you don't need to worry about doing some of the more advanced things or making more complicated worlds, right? I mean, you can have a pretty interesting story and, theaters do this all the time where they, do a black box type setup on stage where they don't have any props except for one chair or something. And, they don't really have any background scenery. They just have characters in simple costumes come out and put on a play like Our Town or whatever. So you can have a really interesting experience just like even on a black background with just some characters, right? It's sort of mm-hmm. the basic thing just to sort of get the hang of like the 30-second timer and typing dialogue and making characters react to what someone else says and whatever. And so there is sort of a gradual, you don't have to jump in with both feet and make this really lush, elaborate story world with hundreds of props and dozens of characters in it, right?
Right.
It is sort of possible to and yet I'd still say you'd have a pretty interesting experience that you haven't really had before in a game if you even just sort of use the sort of very simple configuration. I realize that this is not an interface that's self-explanatory. I don't know if it'd be possible to make one that does what this does. It's kind of like asking Photoshop to be self-explanatory, right?
Right. Yeah.
it's got a lot of power to it. And, there's just a bunch of stuff that requires kind of expert knowledge. You need to know what a layer is and what a mask is and what all these different, Photoshop has, a dozen tools in the toolbar or something.
If not more, I mean.
Well, yeah, I'm just talking about the little toolbox, like with, you know, like the crop tool and the magic wand and all, you know, these little things. And you've got to really experiment with them and see what they do. And you're probably going to screw up a bunch of images before you actually figure out how to do what you want to do. And so I have made these tutorial videos, and there's like 7 of these. And the most basic one is only 10 minutes long. And it basically it shows you how to tell a basic story. And I think once you just watch that video once, you're like, oh, I get it. Yeah, so the metaphor is pretty good, I think. You know, the user interface metaphor. And people who have gotten into using the tool have generally said that it's a good interface for what it's supposed to do, I guess. But I don't know. It's a difficult problem. I mean, you're designing a new UI for something that people have never really done before. And how do you make that intuitive to them?
Yeah, it's got to be tough to try and put that together, especially considering that there's really nothing else out there like this. You know, and you're trying to make it as intuitive as possible for these players that have never run into any game that even compares. And yeah, I can see the difficulty in that.
Right. Well, but the other thing is that it doesn't just need to be a tool that gets the job done or makes the job easy. It needs to be a tool that makes it possible to do this kind of stuff in 30 seconds. So on top of just making like a really robust editor or making something really intuitive, it's like you got to figure out, wow, like, how am I even going to make this stuff possible in 30 seconds? Like, what does someone need to do? And so the interface has things in it that you never see in any other program, like this searchable text database for everything you've ever created. You know, it's like, you don't have that in Photoshop or any other program you've ever seen, but here you need it, right? Because you don't know, like, in 30 seconds, somebody might do something and you think of an object that you have that would sort of satisfy what they just did, and you've got to be able to pull it up, right?
Right.
So these kind of little widgets and different things that I had to create, a lot of them I just kind of had to invent, right? Like, what's the best way for someone to like find something really quickly? And I settled on text-based search, right? And I don't know what other options there would be, but you know, it's like you're interacting with this little weird database kind of widget up in a bunch of them. They're throughout the game for finding everything. And then, you know, even that wasn't good enough because sometimes like you just had some objects up and you got to search for them again. You know, just in the last turn, you were using some character, and now because you did a different search, they're not in the picker anymore. You got to go type their name in again. That doesn't work. So then I had to add a stack, right? So you could switch these things back and forth between a search mode where you're typing something in and like a stack where you can see all the things you've used recently. You know, and the 30-second limit when I was playing real stories with real people made me realize, wow, the search thing is too slow if, you know, to find all the things you just used. So then there's this extra little button that I had to add there. And like, what does that do? It's one more thing to clutter the screen, right? But it had to be there. It's like, it wouldn't work without it. And it also wouldn't work without search. So it's not like you can just have a stack, you know?
Right.
Right.
So it's all those kinds of decisions and design kind of, challenges that you run into when you're trying to make something like this.
Yeah, I got you. You mentioned the 30-second timer. Is that a static 30 seconds or is that adjustable in options or something?
I designed it to be a static 30 seconds. But I did include, it's in the settings folder. So if you want to go in and put it up to however many seconds you want, a number of people I know have done that. Like when they're learning the game, some people say 45 seconds is better for people who are learning. Some people say, I don't even want to play with a time limit. That's not what I'm interested in. They put it up to like 900 seconds and, and just like promise the player that they'll send the move as quickly as they can, you know?
I never thought about that.
But yeah, so people have done all different sorts of things with it. I mean, people have used it for other purposes other than real time improv, right? People have used it as a, like sort of a machinima tool, where they're clearly sort of very carefully crafting each move back and forth from player to controller.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess I didn't want it to be that flexible. I really like, you know, the improv and like the, you know, the fact that 30 seconds really forces this rhythm back and forth between the two people and you're always on your toes and it's a very tense. It's an experience that makes you sweat, right? Mm-hmm. It's sort of an action game or a reflex game in a way. So I really like that, but you know, I don't know. I might as well put it in the settings folder and I guess some people have gotten some use out of that.
Yeah, I mean, no harm in giving people the option, I guess, huh?
Well, I don't know. In some situations, I guess I've found that there sometimes is some harm, right? Because the game ends up turning into something that you didn't really want it to be. And then it's like, what's your role as a designer if you just kind of make this thing that's has no form to it and it just can be anything to anybody? For example, someone was pestering me early on in the process when they were testing an early version that oh, you can't just have speech bubbles. You also need text boxes. Because, you know, what if someone goes to examine a book and, right. And they point the arrow at this book and you want to say, this is Moby Dick. You don't want the book to talk out of a speech bubble and you don't want to have, like, your companion non-player character walk up and say, you just examined Moby Dick, or that looks like Moby Dick, you know, the constant companion, or, mm-hmm. or the, you know, some narrator off the side of the screen with a speech bubble just coming out of thin air saying, that looks like Moby Dick. so anyway, he talked me into this. And so I put these boxes in there so you could switch back and forth between bubbles and boxes. And if you look at something, you know, you can put up a box or whatever you want to use a box for. But then once I started seeing how people were using it, they were using it to emulate old school adventure games, like basically, you know, where one single character is in a scene all by themselves walking around trying to solve a puzzle. And looking at things, examining things, and having this narrator periodically type a box of text to them describing what they've seen, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, no, that's not the game I wanted to make. That's, like, when, you know, I've never used those boxes in any of the stories that I've told. I've never needed them because there's never anything you need to examine because you're not solving puzzles. Why would you want to solve puzzles if you got characters you can interact with? You know, yeah. it's like puzzles are there to keep you occupied because there's nothing more interesting to do. you know, so anything that you need to examine can be, in my stories, can be seen from the simple graphics that I'm using. Because most of the time it's not about like examining objects and trying to figure something out. And so it's like if you, you know, open it up and give people all these options, then they might go down this path where they kind of think it's like going to be great, but they don't really realize it. But they're they're not even really having as interesting of an experience as they could have if the tool had forced them in a different direction. So I don't know. You know, people have also said, well, I want my verbs to be longer than 10 characters. I'm like, no. It's supposed to be a single word.
Yeah.
It's not supposed to be like pick up pie and throw at clown, right? Because that's like too hard for yeah. the controller to do all in one, you know, in one turn. It's supposed to be like pick up pot, pick up, and then the next turn you'd throw it somewhere, right?
Throw, yeah.
So all these kind of decisions, and some people keep emailing me saying, you need to do this, you need to do that, you know, and I'm like, well, actually that would make it a different game. I don't want to do that.
Right.
But once you give people a longer timer, you can't take it back. Once you give people, you know, text boxes, you can't take it back.
Okay, well, I can understand that, you know, going outside the designer's vision. But one of the questions that I had when I first saw the concept of this game was, have you ever thought about a larger multiplayer experience, maybe not for Sleep is Death, but maybe for another game that would be similar and have more than two players?
Yeah, you know, it's an obvious extension. In this case, it was sort of like this was this crazy experiment, and I didn't even know if it would work. I came up with the idea, and I said, well, it would work with, have to have a 30-second, you know, time limit. It has to be turn-based. It has to be low resolution. It had to have, like, typed dialogue and all these other things. I sort of realized that it had to have to even work. But even then, I was like, well, I don't really know that it'll work. What if I sit down to play this with somebody, and I just can't make it happen in 30 seconds and so on? And then, you know, once I tried playing it, I realized that it did work. And I think other people have had success with it as well. So, but the point is that it was this kind of experiment, right?
Yeah.
And it was only that after I saw that it actually did work that I wanted to put it out there and try selling it to people and so on. But yeah, so I really wanted to keep it as simple as possible, given that it's just sort of this proof of concept of this very basic idea that sounds crazy at first.
Right.
So yeah, so I really, you know, when other ideas came into my head about how to make it more complicated or wouldn't it be great if, I was like, no, let's just get the basics down here, you know. And I don't know. Yeah, I guess if you have – some people have talked about having multiple controllers so that two people could be collaborating to do the heavy lifting of getting everything done in 30 seconds to make the world change.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I don't really know how you'd make the interface collaborative like that so that they wouldn't be all over stepping on each other's toes. Like, how would you get them to, during that 30-second interval, like, agree, okay, you're going to go over here and make this guy look like he got shot. You're going to go over here and make the gun look like it fired, you know, as opposed to both going in the same direction and doing the same thing.
Yeah, I could see how that would be difficult.
So I don't know. That'd be a difficult design problem. And then if you just, you know, have multiple players and one person controlling it all, then it's like, well, is it still going to be turn-based? And right. then each person's going to be waiting how long until they finally get to type their one little bit of dialogue into the experience? So like this two-player formula is like, you know, each person, they have to wait, but only a very short amount of time. And even 30 seconds can feel kind of boring and interminable, you know, once you're like deep into a game and you've been playing for 100 turns.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, how do you solve those problems? You make it real time, and then it kind of turns into Second Life, and then that kind of becomes lame.
Yeah. We do not want that.
Well, you know, where like they'll be typing into a bubble above their head, like that you can see it fill up with text as they type, or I don't know what, you know. So yeah, there's a lot of things that sort of kind of break. I don't know. Yeah, it's an interesting problem. I guess I will do some more thinking about it. There's all these sort of unsolved problems lurking in my head about it.
Okay, cool. That being said, I mean, is this game, like, considering it is two players, you think it's better tailored for people that know each other, or you think that any two people can get into a game and enjoy the experience?
Well, I designed it specifically with friends in mind.
Gotcha.
And in a lot of the stuff I wrote about the game originally and in the original documentation and everything, I was always like, you know, this is a game to play with friends. In fact, play in the same room is what I was originally recommending. Mm-hmm. And clearly most people have not listened to that advice. and people have set up, and I intentionally did not create a matchmaking server of any kind or any sort of community portal where you could meet strangers to play with. But people in the community kind of sprung up within the first day of the game's release and set these things up. So I guess people have had some pretty good luck playing with strangers. But I stress that it's a very intimate game. It's kind of like connects your two minds together in this kind of uncomfortable way in some ways. And it's not a game that I would really want to play with a stranger. And it also takes a lot of work to prepare a story ahead of time. And often the story's better if you make it with some particular person in mind. So it's like this very personal thing that you made for them. So I don't know. I mean, would I want to throw all that work away on a stranger, so to speak? So I really still think people should be playing with friends. I think they're going to have a better experience overall that way. I mean, you know, if you play with somebody you really know well and the story goes in kind of a funny direction, I mean, you'll be on the floor in tears. I mean, guaranteed.
Right.
So,
I think it'd be good to note that, you know, for a lot of our listeners, this is going to be one of the first times, they're hearing about Sleep is Death. And what people don't know is that when you purchase the game, you're purchasing two copies, essentially.
And
you can pass on that copy to one of your friends, whether or not it's a roommate that lives with you or someone down the street or whatnot, or someone that you know a lot about and you want to share this experience with.
Obviously, you know, this is a game that you need another person to play with, and it seems mm-hmm. like kind of a ripoff if you buy this game and you're interested in it, but you can't talk any of your other friends into buying it, you know. It seemed like a pretty obvious kind of thing to do, give you somebody to play with. So it's $14, you know, and that gets you, two downloads of the game for as many downloads as two people need forever, you know, for all future releases and everything mm-hmm. else.
That's pretty cool. And both copies are identical, right? It's not one has the GM stuff and one
they're both full featured, unrestricted. Yeah, they don't have DRM on them. And actually you get, you know, versions for Mac and for Linux and for Windows all as part of the same price. And
wow.
And the source code's included and it's open source and you can do, you know, compile it wherever you want and do whatever you want with it after you get it from me. So
that is really awesome.
So you're paying for a download. You're not paying for a license.
That is really cool, man. I have to admit, I'm a programmer as well. So I can understand how important it is for some people that open source be important, you know, cause a lot of the stuff that we use at work is open source. And it makes things very helpful.
Well, I mean, in this case, it's certainly paid dividends because the people who are really into this game, and some of them were programmers, they could look at the source because they wanted to make tools and utilities and other things to go along with the game. And they were able to look at the source to figure out how things worked and, you know, actually make things that worked with the game, you know. So there's a couple of different things out there that certainly would have been much harder for people to do if the source code wasn't available. So I don't know. It's kind of this weird, that's kind of a weird experiment too. It's like you're kind of, giving the actual content of the game sort of away for free once people get it from you. But, I'm not going onto the Pirate Bay and telling people to stop, you know, sharing it there. Right.
Right.
But at the same time, you know, trying to charge people who are getting it directly from me and who are, you know, getting tech support essentially from me and whatever else. It's kind of a weird model. Most people don't. You know, the video game world is extraordinarily closed source. Even for games that are free and have been, you know, are never planned on being sold, the source code is not available for them. So there's this culture of closed source in the game world, which I found kind of alien because I came from the peer-to-peer world and from like the internet systems world where I was a programmer before. And like everything there is open source, right? Like Apache and all this other stuff, mm-hmm. right? And yeah, so it was a little weird. It's like, why aren't you releasing the source for your awesome game that, you know, has been out for 3 years and, you know, it's pretty much done being sold, you know? But
well, props to you for doing that. That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. So it's worked out though. I mean, I've, you know, sold a lot of downloads. So
yeah, I would assume so. And if people are building tools and setting up communities, I mean, it may not have been your intention, but you know, there has to be a part of you that feels pretty good that there are people that are that passionate about it.
Oh yeah, yeah, definitely. But also, I don't know. I guess, you know, if people get really passionate about certain types of games, even some games that I've made, I guess I might feel like they would be sort of like frittering their life away or wasting their time, like getting too deep into my creation or something. But with sleep, but with you know, it's like, oh man, I didn't really want you to waste that many hours of your life on this little thing that I made. But in the case of Sleep is Death, I guess I feel like, because it has such a huge range of possibilities and because the experiences that you have every time you play it are so rich, I guess I feel like I've never felt like I was wasting my time when I was playing it. And I'm, you know, I've been developing it for like 5 months. And I've played, you know, a couple dozen games through it. And every single time it feels like an interesting new kind of experience. So I guess I feel like those people are probably not wasting their time. I don't have to feel as guilty as like if, you know, some people got really addicted to my puzzle game or whatever that I made, you know.
Cool. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe when I was, you know, poking around on your website, you mentioned like story packs that are available for download. Is that correct?
Right, yeah. So the game, so the game has all these editors in it, and with the editors, you can make, you know, objects and characters and rooms, and you can also make music, and all those things can be selected in the game to be bundled into a resource pack, which you can then save to disk. It's this little compressed file that you can easily email around or post online or whatever that has all of these things that you selected to be sent out to somebody else. You know, so if you created some cool characters, some cool rooms, or some really good, like, pieces of soundtrack music or whatever, you can just send your friends this file and they just drop it into their game folder and it'll be loaded up into their database next time they start the game.
Okay, so
that seems to be working pretty well. I mean, on some of the community sites, there's repositories of these resource packs and there's all different sorts of crazy stuff that people have made. You know, and that makes it really, the other thing is that every time you play a story with somebody, all the assets that you use and that you've created for that story world get sent across the wire to the player and added to their database.
And it's now available to them.
Is that, yeah, so it sort of stuff propagates kind of virally or in a peer-to-peer way as people tell each other stories, but the resource packs allows like stuff to propagate in a wider fashion, right? Because you don't have to have this person tell a story to everyone who wants the stuff. You could just like send out this pack to the world and, you know, hundreds of people could download it, you know, without you doing any more work, right?
That is really cool.
So that seems to work really well. And there's all sorts of really cool stuff that people are posting. And, you know, and as people figure things out, that's another way for them to sort of share what they've learned. Like, here's how I made this really cool smoke or fire effect. You know, here's a pack of fire, you know, or here's how I made this Nine Inch Nails soundtrack music. Here, like, actually download this.
Nice.
So, you know, figuring that kind of stuff out, you know, and then you can inspect everyone's stuff in the editor and figure out how they did it. So that I think has been really helpful to kind of bootstrap the process of everyone sort of figuring out new ways of doing things and new ways to use the game and ways that I wasn't even expecting necessarily.
Very cool. Well, what do you have planned in the future for Sleep is Death?
Well, I've got a new version that'll be coming out in the next week or so, version 15, that just, you know, final little bits of polish and a couple little things that need to be improved or whatever. Nothing major. And then after that, I guess I'm pretty much calling it done, except for, you know, I'll be fixing bugs if things come up down the line that people discover, right, or whatever. But I'm going to be thinking very soon about what I'm working on next. And I haven't thought about that yet at all. So I'm just sort of keeping my mind open and putting up a lightning rod, waiting for lightning to strike.
All right. Very cool. That's awesome, man.
Well, if you don't mind, I have a couple more questions for you that's kind of outside the realm of Sleep is Death. One of the main things, Jason, that I've noticed when I was doing a little research on you was you were kind of featured at, now correct me if I'm saying it wrong, Kokomori, their Gamma 256 event.
Oh, yeah, Kokoromi, yeah.
Kokoromi, that's it.
Yeah, that's the thing that I made Passage for. So that was my sort of like breakout Like the, right. the origin of my breakout kind of success was, you know, they had this curated event where they wanted video games that met a certain criteria, and the criteria that year were really low resolution games.
Right.
Like, what can you do with low resolution and weird aspect ratios?
Yeah. And they kind of wanted to, they like to showcase at these events, like, game kind of as a, as an art form.
Yeah. It's, well, it's, I guess they're more showcasing games as a form of hipster culture because it's, you know, it's in this, like, it's in this, essentially in a dance club. They've got these huge screens. Like, the one I was at, I think they had 8 screens with 8 different games that they had picked. And they've got, like, a stage with, like, different, like, chiptune DJs and stuff up there. With like thumping techno music and whatever, and they're serving drinks, and it's like, you know, all the video game hipsters show up there in their Converse All Stars. But
that sounds like a sexy time for everybody.
But you know, so you walk around the space, and there are these big screens, and you know, like an Xbox 360 controller in front of each one, and so you just walk up to this thing that says Passage on the screen and hit some button, and then you're all of a sudden controlling this little guy on this huge screen, right?
Right.
I think Kokoromi's done, and they've been doing it, I think, four years in a row now. And the last one actually was hosted as part of GDC and not in Montreal. You know, they originally started out for the first 3 in Montreal, and then the last one was in GDC because they got that big, I guess. And it was like jammed. I mean, this, it was in a nightclub in San Francisco, but you could barely walk through the place. I mean, it was insane. So I think they're doing cool stuff. Definitely doing cool stuff. Right. And, they gave me the idea for Passage. So I owe them a lot.
Oh, cool.
The idea for Passage, but I mean, if it hadn't been for their constraints, I wouldn't have come up with the idea of Passage, right? It was like, what can I do in this, you know, weird aspect ratio, really narrow game, you know, like, I don't know. Ah, it could be about a guy's life and his timeline of his life. Okay. And that was my starting point. So.
Well, the Kokoromi event that, you know, kind of like while I was doing the research, I was looking at that and I was thinking about, you know, a lot about, you know, games as art and, you know, games doing more than just, okay, I'm sitting there playing it, I beat the game, what's the next game I play? Something that kind of sticks with you. And we talked about it a little bit before recording that, you know, when I played Passage, something stuck with me when I played it. And to me, I think it takes a certain game, a certain amount of, you know, artistic integrity to make something like that. And, with that mindset, I was looking back doing the research, you know, for some questions for the show, and I looked back and found something from you back in February 2007. You actually got a chance to interview Jonathan Blow. Those who don't know, that's the gentleman who developed and created Braid. That's on PlayStation 3 and XBLA. And you got to interview him. And in that interview itself, you specifically asked him, and I quote, do you feel that artistically valuable games can be made by huge development teams present in the industry today? And do they somehow hold an advantage, perhaps in terms of sheer volume of high quality content that they can generate? And how can these small creators or small teams compete artistically? Now, seeing 3 years removed, that kind of, you know, the question you're asking really kind of points to you now as a indie developer who's getting some serious buzz, especially over Sleep is Death. I'd love to hear the answer to your own question.
Yeah, I've got the interview up on my screen right now, actually. when I heard you talking about it, I was like, I better look that up. So what did Jonathan Blow say all that long ago? He said it's pretty hard. Artistic integrity is something that's, you know, becomes harder the more people you have involved with the project. And you can even look at, like, you know, a group like the Beatles that did some really amazing stuff, but toward the end of their career, you know, I guess what's the cover of Let It Be, where they're all looking in 4 different directions.
Right, right.
And even the title of that album is like, you know, let's not try anymore, guys. Let's accept what's happening here. You know, and they're basically 4 really creative, talented people who ended up kind of like pulling the group apart. So even with 4 people, it's really hard. When you get a team of like 100 people, like, it becomes a management problem, first of all. You know, how do you even get the thing out the door? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, trying to get, like, kind of shepherd all those people into sort of one creative vision is really hard. And, of course, the movie industry has figured out how to do this, but they do it in a way that's very regimented and very restrictive in terms of what each person's role is on the project, and everyone really knows their place and accepts it. And, you know, in talking to people who work in the movie industry, you know, the director is the director and the camera operator is the camera operator. And, you know, they all kind of just humbly accept their role. And, you know, there's a lot of, there's all the, just tons of creative deference to the director. We don't really have that in the video game industry. It's like everyone's the smartest person in the room. and if you sit in like a boardroom meeting of like a creative team for video games, it's like, what I've seen is like people throwing ideas into a big pot and stirring it around, you know. Everyone's like so, I don't know, it's like they're sensitive, they have like ownership issues over the stuff that they're making, and people get angry if they don't feel like they have enough creative input. It's like, you're a programmer, you're not supposed to have creative input. Maybe you'll be a game designer someday, but today you're programming, you know, what you're doing, you're supposed to be doing what you're told. I mean, on a movie set, people do what they're told, you know, that's just the way it works. You know, and they'll be a director someday, maybe. And so they understand that. But we don't really, yeah, we haven't, maybe it's from engineering culture or geek culture or programmer culture or something. I don't know what it is. So that makes it really hard in the video game industry to actually do something really expressive. So right. It's much easier to do it when you're by yourself or with a very tiny team. And you can all sort of get into the same vision somehow. But you know, in the case of Jonathan Blow's Braid, he was the one who was maintaining the vision, my understanding of it. And, you know, David Hellman, the guy who did the art, was essentially bringing stuff to him saying, do you like this? Is this what you had in mind? And he would say, no, I want it to be more like this.
Mm-hmm.
Sharper edges, less foggy, less pastels, you know, and then he could bring something else to him.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like David Hellman, like, kind of co-creating this vision as much as Jonathan Blow requesting what he wanted something to look like and David right. Hellman delivering. You know, it's my understanding. And, you know, that's why the game has this totally cohesive feel to it all the way, you know, where the game mechanics and the art and everything else kind of, and the music and everything kind of fit together in this very compact, cohesive whole, because one person was the one who was, you know, picking everything like a movie director would.
Right. Well, one last quick question, cause I know you gotta go, very busy man, but, when talking about games, as art or games trying to get there, you almost have to mention Roger Ebert, the movie critic, and the claims he made about games not being art. One of the quotes that I have that he said, video games by their nature require player choices, which is the opposite of strategy, was the opposite of the strategy of a serious film and literature. And then months later, he revisited this original comment further by going as far as calling games like Braid and Flower pathetic. And he says, I quote, no one in or out of the field has ever been able to cite a game worthy of comparison with great poets, filmmakers, and novelists. Now, that very, very last statement may have some truth to it, but can games ever make it to that point? Whether indie or AAA titles? And if so, like, what do you think is missing? You know, what is missing that's going to, you know, one day be able to make these critics say, you know what, okay, there's a game people have been looking for?
Right. Well, I mean, the only problem I really have with Ebert's latest argument is that, as far as I can tell, he didn't play Braid.
No, he didn't. He admitted he didn't play any of them.
I imagine that if he actually did sit down in front of Braid and interact with it, even for the first like 5 minutes of it,
mm-hmm.
he would like at least stroke his chin a little bit. Like that, the opening scene of Braid where you're like walking kind of like, I don't know, across a bridge over the city and you're walking down under street lamps and then you get into this house that's kind of empty. And even the experience of controlling Tim in that situation, even though there's not very much to do.
Yeah.
And being sort of enveloped by the music and everything. You know, I think that would have at least given him a little bit of pause. I mean, if he's just watching a gameplay trailer of Braid and, you know, hearing a little bit of quoted text or something and saying it's like wordy fortune cookie,
mm-hmm.
he's not really being fair. I mean, he wouldn't do that to a movie. But that's my only complaint. I mean, he, you know, his argument about authorial control is dead on. I mean, that's a huge issue that plagues us.
Absolutely.
And Sleep is Death is a game that basically, you know, tears, you know, cuts open that wound and pours salt in it, right?
Yeah, you give up that right altogether. I mean,
right. You know, abdication of authorship is a core design principle of a lot of people who are really good game designers. And, you know, and that really calls into question, you know, like what sort of inherent value is in the work itself, or what is waiting for, what, you know, what part of the work is waiting for the player contribution, and what's the player going to contribute? I mean, you can't guarantee that the work's going to, you know, be cohesive and have a vision and so on if the player is contributing half of it.
Right.
And the player might take it in some crazy direction that you didn't, you know, expect. And, you know, sleep is death stories all the time get thrown off the rails. that's sort of the point. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess quite, you know, and also Ebert, if he played Sleep is Death, would say it's not a game, and he'd be right. And, you know, and his latest argument is pretty solid, talking about games being based on rules and all these other things. You know, and he talks about how he plays chess, which is, you know, reassuring.
Right.
That at least this guy, you know, he has devoted his life to some deep appreciation of some game, right? So he's capable. He understands what games can do and why they're interesting. I think he just doesn't really understand why people are clamoring for games to be art. Yeah, and I don't know. It's something that, well, it seemed like we had quite a bit of success over the past couple of years, but now we're sort of in, I think we're in a bit of a doldrums, you know? So I don't know where it's going to go from here.
Yeah, I think everybody's too worried about shooting each other.
right.
So anyway, that's it. That's all for the questions for me, man. I'm done picking your brain. If there's anything from you, Chris?
No, I have nothing else. The one thing I would say is, Jason, why don't you pimp your stuff one more time before we let you go?
I'm not big on pimping, but yeah, Sleep is Death. If you do a Google search for Sleep is Death, or you go to sleepisdeath.net, it's available. You can read all sorts of stuff about it, see all sorts of player-created stories and everything that people have been doing with it. And it's available as a download for two people for $14. And I haven't gotten a single negative complaint or email or comment about it. So I think everyone who's downloaded it has been pretty happy.
That's a pretty good stat right there.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, Jason, thank you very much for joining us. I hope you had a good time, and it was very informative for us. That's for sure.
Yeah. Thank you guys. It's been fun.
Absolutely. All right. We'll talk to you later.
Yep. Bye-bye.
So thank you once again, Jason Rohr. We appreciate you coming on the show and giving us all the information that you gave us about Sleep is Death. It sounds really interesting. I know, as I mentioned during the interview, I didn't get a chance to play it, but I know Travis got to play a little bit. So hopefully
fun.
I'll get a chance to you know, hook up with you online with it, and we'll get a chance to play it a little
Absolutely.
Bit more.
And if I can say anything to the listeners, guys, if that interests you, any bit to come get this game. Guys, check it out. It's really, really fun. What I've played, you know, of it so far is great. If you want to get a chance, you know, to jump on with us, we would love to get a chance to jump on with you guys just as much. If you want to buy this game, purchase it, give us, you know, send us an email, either, you know, find us online. You know how to find us. You know where we're at. You know, just find us, yeah. And we will play. Like, especially
if you're a creative person and you can actually take on that, that creator role where you're the one doing everything behind the scenes, we will happily jump in and go through your stories with you. That would be cool.
Yes.
Shit for us. So.
yes, because I'm way too busy to really get into the meat of like how to create. Like, I can do some basic stuff, but there's some things like they're way too advanced for my mind that
yeah.
I don't have the time to really.
I have a friend I'm going to pitch this to, definitely.
Send him my way, man. I'd love to play.
Yeah, I have a friend that I'm going to pitch it to, and I bet that he'd probably be able to make something pretty cool. Cause he used to, one of the things I mentioned during the interview is, like tabletop role playing games and like dungeon masters and game masters and stuff like that. And, he was always the dungeon master for, Crystal and her friends, her group of friends. He was always the dungeon master for their D&D campaigns. And so I think I might throw this his way and see if he's interested in trying to create something for it.
Sounds like it's right up his alley.
Absolutely. All right, cool. Let's do some new releases. What do you think?
Aight.
Jeff's back with us now.
Welcome back. You're hey. Welcome back.
Yeah, you're welcome back. You're from Canada.
This time, you're welcome back.
Great interview, right. By the way, guys.
Thanks.
Thanks. No problem.
You held on to every word.
I did.
All right, so I got a voicemail from Mr. Repeat.
Pistol Pete.
So probably the most interesting release this week, or at least the most interesting looking anyway, is 3D Dot Game Heroes, which is From Software's attempt to make, well, Zelda. And they did it by sort of extruding the 2D graphics out into 3D and making it all 3D voxely goodness, and it looks pretty awesome and very unique. So yeah, that's also $40, I believe. Nice cheap game there. Good on Atlas for, you know, putting it at a reasonable price. So we also have Lost Planet 2 coming out for the 360 and the PS3. Looks pretty awesome. I've always had a kind of a soft spot for Lost Planet because you get to drive mechs, which I love. So that's cool. And finally, it looks like we might be getting the Rocket Knight reboot for PSN and XBLA.
Which looks cool.
And that would pretty much do it for next week.
All right. Gaps, Mr. Riccio?
Shit, that's pretty much the main things like you'd want to get.
Is UFC next week? No.
No, I think UFC's out for not out for a while.
Oh, okay. Chris, you there, buddy?
I guess it helps if I turn up my volume.
That's fucking... Yeah, how's that mute button doing?
I actually said to pause because I don't have the gas.
Soon you're going to be drinking maple syrup, riding on a moose, and wearing plaid. Just letting you know.
I know. I'm
that's just like you, Jeff. Hey, we did that shit
maybe
all
we should leave this
weekend,
shit in while I'm trying to pull up the releases.
Yeah, we did.
All right, we'll do it on the fly. What the hell?
We'll do it live.
All right. What week are we next week?
The 11th, I think it is.
We're doing the 10th through the 16th. Yes. All right, so Gaps, Skate 3, Batman Arkham Asylum Game of the Year Edition. And,
in 3D.
And that is it for PS3. Let's move to... Let's see what's on PSP. Anything on PSP? Naruto, Ultimate Ninja Heroes 3 is coming out for PSP next week.
Meh.
PS2 has probably got nothing. Hey, it's got nothing for the entire month. That's fucking awesome.
Meh.
Xbox 360. Skate 3, Batman Arkham Asylum. And that will do it. That fills in the gaps for 360 for the Wii. Meh. We are getting... Who cares?
Meh.
I don't... Nothing. There's nothing coming out next week for the
Wii.
Wow,
that's like a
Holy
first.
Crap.
What about the DS?
Well, the DS probably has like 18 games. Hold on a second. Here we go. Puzzle
don't
Quest
name
2.
Them if they're crap.
Ooh,
oh, Puzzle Quest 2. There you go.
Two.
That's kind of cool.
That's pretty cool, but that's the only
oh
time
Oh, my
for
God.
DS.
Who are you fooling? It's not going to be 3D Dot Game of Heroes. We're killing me with the DS talk. Is anyone else not going to get anything
Dude, if Jason was on here, he might have picked Puzzle Quest 2. That guy bought Puzzle Quest 1 on like 19 systems.
No.
Yeah, but he didn't. I don't think he was a big fan of it on the DS. I think he was. He played it. I think he played it on the PSP or tried to. And you know, he gets the big hand syndrome on PSP, and
cramps
he got
up.
It on like PSN and Xbox Xbox Live Arcade, and yeah.
But Puzzle Quest 2. Oh, so it's already out.
No, first Puzzle Quest.
Oh yeah, okay.
He
yeah,
played
okay.
the first Puzzle yeah. Quest. I don't think he played it. I don't think he did DS for it. But yeah, I mean, so do we really need to ask a pick of the week?
No, you don't have to ask. It's a gift from Atlas themselves. It's $40. You'd be dumb not to buy it. It's 3D
Damn
Dot
right.
Game Heroes.
3D Dot Game Heroes.
Lost Planet 2.
Really?
No.
Even after all the shitty reviews it's getting?
I'm totally kidding, of course, 3D Dot Game Hero.
Oh, I'm about to say, dude. I'm about to... We're going to fist fight when I come to the end of the summer. We're going to fight. People think this is like... We're just playing around. No, I'm going to beat your ass.
Oh, reach high. Come on, someone's got to get the reference.
Reach?
I didn't get that one.
No, not reach. Okay, never mind. So he
you
says,
trying to
shoot,
say I'm
aim
short?
High. Aim high, motherfucker.
Are you
aim
like
high.
Fucking around with me because I have a little bit of a height problem? Oh, I see how
it's
it
from
is.
40-year-old
are you
virgin,
messing with
dude.
Us because we're vertically challenged?
40-year-old virgin, watch the movie, you'll get it right away.
Pull out your fucking rifles, pointing at a shorty. It's open season. Bastard.
Oh, fuck. All right. Travis, I'm going to pass it to you. Let's do some emails, man.
Oh, I got an email. It's coming right up. It's anonymous, so I'm going to go ahead and read it right out. It says, hey, what's up with this Jeff guy? He seems like he's kind of a douche all the time. I really wish that he would shut his fucking mouth. The end. Best email ever. Short and sweet to the point. Can't even argue it.
You win all of our contests for the next 6 months.
From Travis, sent from my Android phone.
For serious though, we
for
have,
serious like for
you know
serious.
I love you, man.
Oh, I know. I'm
no, I was talking about the movie. I know. Womp womp. Or yeah, that's when you need the sound bite right there.
Oh,
all right,
man.
Shutting up.
Kung Fu Gold Chain revisits us once more. He says, when the hell is Nintendo going to get with the program? I keep hearing all this good stuff about 3D Dot Game Heroes being everything we have wanted in a Zelda game again.
Darksiders Revisited. Is it going to get to the point where people will say the next Zelda game is a clone of Darksiders? 3D Dot Game Heroes, etc.? Probably not, but I will, damn it. Hopefully that Zelda Metroid Castlevania game we've all wanted for so long will appear in the near future. Later. Didn't we kind of get that already with Shadow Complex?
Oh, did we?
That's the Metroidvania, yeah.
Pretty much, yeah.
Well, that happened, now, it happened with Metroidvania.
I wanted to clear something up. I think that 3D Dot Game Heroes is more supposed to be kind of like a throwback to the old school Zeldas.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily. So it's not in the same category, I would say, as like Darksiders and the 3D Zeldas.
Yeah, because I'm going to like 3D Dot Game Heroes.
So. I see what he's getting at, though. I mean, it's eventually, maybe, if a lot of people make, like, a lot of people probably played Darksiders and never played a Zelda game. But that's, yeah. I don't know how many people have done that.
Well, I heard, now this is just rumor, but I heard that there's going to be a Metroidvania-style Castlevania game that's multiplayer coming out on XBLA.
Hmm. That would be pretty cool.
You'd be damn sure I'd be getting that on launch day and trying to set up like days for people to play on that one.
Dude, it's going to be your boner knocking on Travis's door at 3 o'clock in the morning when that comes out. That would be pretty cool. I would definitely pick that up as well. That'd be cool. But I mean, people did with GoldenEye. It was like, oh, it's like GoldenEye, but you know, different. And then it got to, oh, it's like Halo, but kind of different. So I mean,
there's a lot of people that are doing these like kind of throwback games, but in updated maybe like 2.5D graphics. Because now what we're Konami's talking about bringing back Russian Attack. You know, I don't know if you guys have heard about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're redoing it. Looks like Shadow Complex.
A lot of people have said that, but it's
not the same game, like type of
right,
game at
it's,
all. But,
it,
yeah.
It's just that visual style people seem to think it does. But it, apparently, I was listening to Giant Bomb, and they said that it plays like the old Russian Attack does, except you actually do like knife combos
instead of just like
slashing the knife out there.
Yeah, back to releases. I'm also going to be picking up the Rocket Knight Adventures game next week, too.
Yeah,
so yeah, that looks fucking
really
badass.
Fun. Yeah.
I actually wanted to touch on this for a second. Rocket Knight Adventures is coming out on Wednesday for 360.
Mm-hmm.
And
Thursday,
the following PSN. Tuesday for PSN. Is this going to be a running thing now? I mean, PSN
the following Tuesday.
Moves their yeah, PSN moves that, their PSN release date to Tuesdays.
To Tuesday.
And now everyone's going to do it the week after Xbox Live Arcade. I really hope this is not going to become a trend.
Why doesn't Sony just fucking put why don't they match them up? Like why can't they do that?
Why can't they be like, hey, the new game's coming on this date and everything else? It's all about one-upping. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
But I mean...
Like, just put it out on the same day. Who cares?
Xbox Live has the whole, we're doing it, we have the games come out on Wednesday, but all the other content comes out on any given day. Why doesn't Sony do the same thing, but keep it, like, the games come out on a certain day? That's what I've never got. Why update...
It doesn't make any sense to me.
So it's coming out the next Tuesday?
Yeah, it's coming out the following Tuesday for PSN.
That must mean that like Microsoft or something must have some kind of deal where if you're releasing something on Xbox Live on a certain given week, it has to come out on that first. That's the only thing. Why would they do that?
They might.
Oh.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes me wonder if PSN was still updating on Thursdays, would we have gotten it Thursday? You know,
probably.
I don't know. Probably so. But if that's the case, it just sounds like, you know, PlayStation, you know, Sony was trying to be shifty and say, okay, well, we're moving to Tuesdays
now.
Yeah. But all of a sudden, boom, Microsoft either A, you know, said, okay, guys, we have this contract. It's supposed to come out first. Even if they moved it, they're going to have to go to the Tuesday after us. You know, they try to like, you know, legally said, okay, they're trying to one-up us, but it's not going to work this way because we have a deal. So it seems like that may or may not have been what had happened, but...
Yeah, I think the intention was to get a day ahead of time, and it's backfiring on them.
Yeah, so, without a doubt, that was.
I'll probably wait the week then, maybe because this is the D-pad alone. But,
yeah, I'm getting on PSN for the and I've talked about this before. If there's a multi platform like downloadable title, I'll get it on PSN just because of hard drive space.
Right.
So.
Yeah, with the Reach demo, I have like 280 megabytes remaining left on my 20 gig.
Yeah, was it 1 point something?
1.3 gigs, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my God.
Pretty hefty.
That's about all the space I've got left on my hard drive. Hey, Travis, I'm looking to hacking a 250 gig hard drive for my 360. I'll let you know how that works out.
Yeah, that'd be kind of cool.
Let me know. I would never be interested in doing that. Wink.
All right.
You ready for another one?
Let's move on to some more emails.
All right. Brong comes back. Mr. B to the wrong. He says, hey. I actually got a copy of God of War 3 the day after I sent the email that you guys read and platinumed the game after less than a week.
Wow. I still haven't done my hard playthrough. That's pretty much all I need, I think.
I wish I had time.
Well, he says on to his questions, because, of course, he has a couple of random ones for us.
Of course.
Number one, who should have been added to the Super Street Fighter 4 roster? I think they should have considered some of the EX characters. Jeff, I'm going to hand this one to you, buddy, because I have no clue.
Totally EX. I'm thinking maybe Skullmania, whatever the hell that guy's name was.
Skullmania was the first person I thought of, dude. Seriously. Because I used him when I played EX. I thought he was awesome.
Because EX really wasn't... It was kind of bad, but... I don't know. It's not really that bad.
It wasn't that bad.
I would have liked to see, like, Alex from 3. He's also in the Tatsunoko vs. Capcom games.
Wasn't he the main character from 3? Like, he was, like, supposed to be, like, the central character and not Ryu. Even though Ryu and Ken were in it, like, Alex was, like, the main person.
I don't think so, because I think Alex came in the second iteration of 3, if I could be mistaken, though. Because I know they added in two characters after the first iteration, then added in Chun-Li for Third Strike.
Right.
So I can't remember if Alex was one of those, or if it was that guy with that guy. I'm terrible with the names of the guys in 3. The guy with the who puts his arm behind his back. Yeah. Either I'd like to see either way, either Alex or one of the twins. I can't remember their names either. Fuck. These are just some of the characters I use in 3 or dabbled in here and there. I would like to see at least one of them in there. Probably one of the twins, I think.
You know, if Jason listened to the show, he'd be screaming into his iPod right now.
I don't think so. Jason wasn't that much into, I don't think he's that much into the Third Strike either.
Right.
But who knows? He's probably screaming either way. Chris? Travis? Well, I guess Travis
I have no
Street
idea.
Fighter, so.
This is a tough one because there a lot of the characters that I really enjoyed in Street Fighter were already in it.
Mm-hmm. I just busted like Oro. That was the guy with the one arm.
Yeah, I don't know.
Makoto, Jinsirin. Oh fuck! Yeah, there's a lot of players in 3 actually that I didn't bring over.
I think the only Hugo. One that I would really that I'm really surprised they haven't done yet. Is like they always have Ken and Ryu together. Why don't they have Charlie and Guile together?
Yeah, there's one. There's Charlie. Yeah.
Oh, they added Charlie into the roster in some Street Fighter games.
Yeah, he's in the Alpha games.
Really, I didn't know that.
He's also in Marvel's Capcom. I think he's in Marvel's Capcom as well.
Sweet, that's really cool.
Charlie is in. He's in.
He's definitely
in
Alpha 2. Yeah, he's Marvel's Capcom. Yeah, okay.
Guile is in X-Men, right? X-Men vs. Capcom.
I think they're both in Marvel's Capcom 2. Yes. And Yun and Yang, one of those guys, are pretty cool. I wouldn't mind seeing them.
Okay.
Cool.
That's all I got. Hey, how about Saddam? No, just kidding.
You know there's going to be someone out there who'd master the hell out of him.
I know.
Just kick everyone's ass.
Well, to finish up the email, B-Rong had one last question. He says, games or game that everyone should stay away from?
Everyone should stay away from?
Everyone
like besides Lair and Two Human,
those count.
Yeah, and you know, even though I like up to a point, I like Two Human still. Like I still enjoyed my time with it. I can agree with that. Like yeah, it's there's definitely more people that will hate it more than anything.
I would definitely say Lair over Two Human though. Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I don't think.
I mean, we could pick the obvious ones that you just would never buy, like fucking, like, Imagine, like, whatever.
I've got one.
But I honestly have not... Okay, go ahead.
The original Red Steel.
Ooh, oh, that was pretty
game
bad.
Game is ass.
That's a good one.
The second one is apparently really good, though.
Yeah, I've heard mixed stuff. It's hard being on the budget, I haven't really played a really bad game in a while, now that I think about it.
Yeah, I've had to limit the games that I'm buying lately, and it's like I only buy games that I know I'm going to play.
Yeah.
You know?
Like Dead Space. Absolutely. I totally know what you mean.
I only buy games at launch that I know I'm going to play.
Well, I can say the first Matrix game.
Which one? I think I had Enter the Matrix. Yes, I bought that game because of the hype of the movie.
Exactly.
I bought it the day we saw the movie. I'm like, oh, I'm going to buy the video game, even though I knew it was going to be shit.
Well,
didn't they hype it like if you want to know the entire story of the Matrix, you have to play the game too.
Well,
like,
they
something like that.
They tried to bridge. It was the bridge between the Matrix 1 and Matrix 2. But I wouldn't have added this to this wouldn't have been my answer if Path of Neo ever came out, because it's obviously the superior Matrix game and it's really, really good. It's one of my favorite, you know, third person.
Is that just for PC?
No, no, it's PS2, Xbox, and PC.
Oh, so it wasn't that bad?
No, dude, it was fantastic.
Really?
It was fantastic. It was pretty much like your third-person beat-em-up God of War type game. Because, like, you shoot, like, when you level up, you gain experience, just like in God of War. You pick what you want to level up in. Like, you have, you know, you choose. So you can go through an entire game and not have a specific amount of moves. But it's really good. They perfected really what the hand-to-hand bullet time, you know, slow-motion hand-to-hand combat, you know, should have been from the first game with Enter the Matrix. And, you know, and of course, everybody wanted Neo in the first place. You don't play a Matrix game to be Jada Pinkett Smith. You want to be fucking Neo,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, hell yeah. Maybe Trinity.
Or Morpheus. I think Morpheus would have been badass. Mm.
That would have been badass.
I like Morpheus a lot.
Yeah, well, you know one I would pick? What was the second MMO we played for the free MMO month we did?
Oh, fuck.
That was god-awful. Yeah, oh,
yeah, Domo,
because
the first one was Atlantica,
That was a cool game. But
then the last
was
Dungeon
ass.
Runner, whatever it was already. But Domo, you guys, I had to play through that shit like for like an hour.
You can blame Jason for that one, man. That was his
one. Man. That was, you know, yeah.
Man. Cool. What else?
One more email. It's from Michael Ford. We know him as Mike Florida 25. He says, "Hello, Indus. I hope you enjoyed yourselves in warm, sunny Florida, my home state." Man,
humid,
Ed,
hot as
warm
fuck.
Is not the fucking word. Oh my god! It was fucking 93 degrees.
Yeah.
On Saturday.
And now you know why I don't live there anymore.
Oh my
balls
god! It was
started
horrible.
Sweating the second you wake up. Oh my god! It's just wow. The gravy was a brewing.
He continues on. Anywho, last week on the show, someone sent in an email asking what game had a secondary character that you liked better than the main character.
Yeah.
I can't believe none of you said this, especially you, Travis. What about Solid Snake in Metal Gear Solid 2? You start up the game and play about an hour as Snake, only to realize that you are stuck with Raiden for the rest of the game. Snake, it by far is the better character. I spent the entire game anticipating a switch back to Snake, a switch that, needless to say, never happened. I just thought I would drop that little answer into the podcast. Hope you guys are doing well, and good luck with the baby, Chris.
Hey, thanks.
From Mike, Florida 25 on VG Evo, sent from my droid via Android email, iPhones are for pussies.
I think probably the reason we didn't mention it is because he's the main character in
all the other
games. So, I mean, it's not like we never got a chance to use him.
Yeah. You
do have a very good point, though.
I'd agree. I think we didn't think about it because we just didn't think about it.
Snake still is like the main character of the entire series. When you look at the series as a whole, that's why, I mean, I personally didn't think about it, but I do agree. I for one, am one of the few people that liked Raiden. It didn't take him to be a cyborg in the fourth game for me to
cool.
like him like everybody else. I liked his character and his struggles in Metal Gear Solid 2. Like, I play Metal Gear Solid 2 more than any of the other Metal Gears still. Like, I love 2. It's a really fun game.
I need to go back and play that one again.
It's so good. Like, it really is probably my favorite. But there's a lot of problems with that game. Like, for instance, every time you get a cutscene, switch the nanotechnology, and then you get a, you know, 30-minute conversation just over codec. Yeah, the game's not perfect, but
isn't that all the Metal Gears?
Well, I think, oh man, 4 is damn near, like, I don't know very many games that still to this day have not gone to that quality. I don't know. That game is just amazing to me. But anyway, I want to add another one to that little, like, you know, what's the second character? Fucking Auron from Final Fantasy X. You know, there's a lot of hate with Final Fantasy X, man, but fucking Auron, like, his entire story, like, the voice acting, the way he looks, he's badass.
Was he the guy at the beginning with the big, long, like,
the big red cloak, and he's, like, drinking and fucking... Oh,
I was going to name him last week when we did. I was actually going to say him, but I didn't play enough at 10, but I'm like, I didn't play a lot of 10. I was going to name his, like, he seemed pretty badass, but I didn't know his name, and I was like, I could look like a fucking retard.
Yeah, he's the best character in the game. And then his story, when you find out about him in the end, oh, it's amazing. It blows your mind. So, anyway, yeah, I got to throw Auron in there because I probably... overall, I like Auron better than Locke. So, anyway, go ahead. That's it for the emails, and we're done. Do you have any voicemails, Chris? Are we good?
I do have a voicemail. You guys want to hear it?
Nice.
Yeah. What up, Andrew?
Nomishin.
Nomishin. Yeah, this is actually my first voicemail I've ever done before, so if I sound bad or it doesn't sound good or I just suck at it, yeah, I'm new at this, so shut up. Anyway, I got a question for you guys. So, you know how games are pretty much, like, perfect these days? Your God of War, your Mass Effect 2, your, Bayonetta, all these games. What I want to know from you guys is, what's your most perfectly unperfect game? And by that, I mean, like, there's something about that game that's just, like, it just throws you off, and it's not really that good, but you just love it. It's like one of your best games ever. Like, you think of something like that. Like an example for me is pretty much, PSP. I love the fucking game. The game is, like, awesome. I love platformers and it's really fun. But there's something about, the difficulty is one thing. That's just like, I can't, it's like probably the most difficult game I ever played in my freaking life that I actually beat. I've never played Demon's Souls, but the last few on that. And there's, like, there's something about that jumping in that game. It's like, it's not like the Little Big Planet. Like, it's like a perfect jump and everything like that, but, like, you can't, like, jump forward unless you, like, actually do it ahead of time. It's hard to explain, but, like, when you play it, you'll get what I mean. You can't jump the way you want to jump. And that just adds to the difficulty, and then, like, it's hard! It's hard! Anyway. It's fucking hard. But I love the game, so do you guys have anything like that? Yeah, just let me know. Anything else? Oh, you want to know stuff about
let it out.
You want to know stuff about Normal Heroes? Yes. I will send you guys an email giving you pretty much every barrel of the information about the first one, the HD one, and the second one, so you'll know, like, pretty much everything that you need to get from it. Yeah. that's pretty much it. I guess I'll see you guys at the Deuce.
Yes!
The Deuce. I will be there, actually, because I'll be in Florida around that
Deuce.
Time.
Deuce!
So I pretty much have no excuse not to be there.
Damn right.
And you guys will kick my ass.
If you live in Florida, you need to be there.
That's another story. I guess one more thing. Like, I never really drank before. Well, I drink. Because, like, apparently, if you're in BG Evo, you have to drink. But yeah, I haven't drunk since probably since my 21st birthday. Yeah, actually my 21st birthday because I don't fucking remember it.
Nice.
It was my 21st birthday, and you said, like, and I was like, "Hey, give me anything you got, anything alcohol related, anything like that."
Give me the
and
beer.
Just like, yeah, just continue on. So fuck it. Anything alcohol related, just give it to me, and I'll take it. I'll take it, and I'll drink it, and I'll enjoy it. And I did. And I don't fucking remember it. It was my 21st birthday. I'm like, give me anything. The first thing I remember is drinking something called Fighting Cock or something like that. Yeah, don't man. But yeah, I drank that and I don't remember anything else. So this would be my first time drinking since since my 21st birthday, which was like 3 years ago.
Wow.
And I want some Who Gas.
Oh, all right.
Who Gas? That
sounds awesome. But yeah, that's it. I suck at this. Enjoy yourselves. See you next time. You'll get my email. Last Dragon Rocks and...
Hell yeah! Who's the master? Show enough, motherfucker. Hell yeah.
All right, Namashin's going to come to IndusFest, man. That's awesome.
That's fucking awesome. That is rad.
I cannot wait to meet that motherfucker.
Man. Yeah, same here.
He sounds cool, man. Yeah. I think we're going to have a good time with him, and we're going to get you drunk.
Drunk? Just saying.
Oh, yeah, and dude, if you live in Florida, look, it may help you out. You want to contact 00Recon, Johnny is a Boy, or Ace is High. Glenn and Kelly from, Kill 9 and Kelly B, you want to get in touch with them because, you know, I think they're all trying to group together and getting one
doing
Florida.
A big trip up here.
Like a Florida caravan. And should be able to hitch a ride, maybe pitch in a little bit of gas or something like that. And, that may be your best bet of, you know, your cheapest bet to get in, to the deuce.
I agree.
Yeah.
It's worth it.
Cool.
For that
absolutely.
One more game.
We're going to, for people who have not been last year, guys, we're going to talk it up. The Deuce, one more game, 2010. It's going to be the shit. I'm serious, man. I cannot wait. I'm so psyched about it.
It's going to be good.
It's good. Yeah. It's going to be good time. And, we already have a bunch of people that are signed up that are coming and everyone's really excited. So,
people listening who aren't part of VG or whatever, don't be afraid. Just check out the thread, whatever. If you want to come, trust me, we're not that big of a douche. That sentence almost made sense. You'll have a good time. Trust me.
And even if you don't want to sign up for VG Evo and you still want to come, just drop us a line. Drop us an email.
Absolutely.
Let us know you're coming. And so we know to expect you. And, we'll work it out.
And if anything, we may know people in your area that may be able to help you out. Because, I mean, like I said, even if you're not a part of VG Evo and you're just listening to the show because you listen, guys, we talk about VG Evo so much because they're a great community. And they're good people. It's something that we mentioned, Jeff. We actually mentioned in the car this past weekend. It's like, you know, you go through your entire life and like you can only maybe count like your best friends on this one finger. I mean, I'm sorry, on one hand. And like you're looking for, you know, you want to grow up and you want to find good friends, people to hang out with. When it's all said and done, when you're adults, you may have a couple of good friends from like high school and college and everything. But when it comes down to it, all you had to do was just turn on your fucking PS3. And you got some great, great people to meet, great people to hang out with. I mean, I met, you know, these two douches right here. So, I mean, like, you know, drop us a line. We can definitely network you with other people. We would love to have you at the Deuce. There's no question about it. We'd love to have you. The more, the merrier.
Absolutely.
Word.
All right. So let's get to Namashin's question that he had in there. That was like 2 minutes before he finished that voicemail. So a game that's not so good that you still love.
We've kind of answered this even with me being on the show. 24 of the game.
Oh, yeah.
Has always been one of my big ones.
Demon Souls? I'm kidding. I don't really know.
I'm not going for that bait.
Nah, I wasn't going to let you have it anyway. I don't know, man. It's hard to tell because I've been trading in games lately, which I really shouldn't do. And I'm like... Because I can't...
You're going to regret that.
Single income family right now. Like, if I want to buy a game, I can't just go out and buy it. I got to freaking trade shit in.
You need to start selling weed on the streets to keep the operation afloat, buddy.
For real. I honestly can't answer that. Dead or Alive 4. Actually, you know what? I actually think Dead or Alive 4 is a decent... Actually, that is a good game. That is, like, the oldest game I have in my library that I've never traded in. I think.
Nice.
Out of both of them. But I actually do think it's a good game. I can't answer that right now. I honestly don't know.
Okay. Well, I think I've said this before too. Mine would probably be White Knight Chronicles or even Phantasy Star Universe. You know,
I got one
overall,
for you, Chris.
They are considered not very good games.
Oh,
but I
got
still
one.
Had a fucking great time playing them. So.
Alien versus Predator.
Oh, there you go.
There you go. Yeah. Still play that every once in a while.
I have one for you, Chris. I'll keep it in RPG genre too.
What's that?
Because you had mentioned you liked it. Saga Frontier.
Meh.
Not a very good game.
No, it's not.
And I thought you said you liked it.
I said I played the shit out of it. I didn't say I liked it very much.
You played the shit out of it, but you didn't like it.
I suffered through a lot of it. It's like, yeah.
Oh, breaking news, by the way. Tanya is just about to start playing Halo Reach. Like, right
really?
Now. Yeah. She's playing Hexic, you know, with the sound off, and then all of a sudden she's like... Just threw an ODST and like, what are you doing? And then I see Reach load up.
Is it really bad that I just got a boner just now?
This is going to be funny. You stream this.
I keep dying. I don't understand.
Wow, Reach has great ground textures.
Just put her in Halo 3 and we'll play Monster Trucks tonight.
Yeah, seriously.
All right, you guys want to do Question of the Week?
Sure.
Question of the Week for next week is, what genre that you love has a game that you just cannot get into?
I like that question.
I can think of quite a few, actually.
Yeah, really. Take one of your favorite genres out there, and one that you can play almost any game in that genre that comes toward your way, and then find a game that you just can't get into in that genre. That's what we want to know. What genre is it? What game is it? To answer the question of the week, send us an email. That address is email@interactivedistractions.com. You can send us a voicemail. That number is 706-760-4337.
It's almost late, but it's not.
You can get us also on Google Talk, and that's interactivedistractions@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter. We are Indus Podcast. And individually, we are Indus Chris, Indus Travis, Indus Jason, and Indus Geoff.
That's G-E-O-F-F.
You spell your name with a G because it's like Canadian.
Maple syrup. Moose.
Oh, God.
We also have a Facebook group that is Interactive Distractions Podcast. And I believe that is it for cleanup. You guys have anything else?
I don't think so.
Okay, I have one more thing before we go. Because we suck and we haven't done this yet. Well,
oh, what do we suck? What haven't we done?
We have not congratulated EDP, Down to Fordex, and Game Crashers for getting on the VG Evo Podcast Network.
Yeah, we did.
We did?
I'm pretty sure we did.
No, maybe
did
that
we
was
not?
The episode I wasn't here.
Yeah, it might have been. But we'll congratulate them again.
Yes, congratulations.
Yay! Woo!
Three great shows. We highly suggest checking them out. We are big fans. So, yeah, go check out all the podcasts on the VG Evo Podcast Network. They are all worth a listen. So,
definitely.
That's it for me. So,
yeah.
I guess until next week, my name's Chris.
I'm Travis.
And I am Jeff.
Bye, 3D.GameHeroes, and we'll talk to you next week.
Welcome to the Goose Sucks.
Peace!